Award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. And Jolene Jordan, welcome back.
Thank you, Peter. Gosh, it's good to be back.
It's been a couple of weeks.
Gone forever, yeah.
Yeah, neither of us, both of us took a personal day. We each had things to do last Sunday, and there it was right in the middle of all that right-to-work nonsense and all those other horrible laws. That
heartbreaking not to be in here, and then heartbreaking as to what happened.
Heartbreaking to be in here tonight.
Yeah.
I was thinking, you know, we were on the air the day of 9/11.
We
We
were on the air when it happened. I remember I called you and I said, you know, because you didn't watch TV at all then.
Right.
And I said, Peter, you got to turn it on or get on the internet or something, you know. And I said, what do we do? And he said, well, I guess we broadcast. So off we went.
And there's something that we just keep taking these hits as a nation over and over again. I mean, if you think about, you know, percentage-wise, the number of people directly affected, it's pretty small. But people
as
have
in what happened just the other day?
Anywhere. If you added up everybody, every school massacre, 9/11, I mean, given the fact that we're talking about 400 million people in this country, the people that are directly affected is fairly small. But they're always innate in human consciousness, I think, is this sense of communality.
Yeah, for sure.
And you could say, hey, what do I care? You know, I wasn't in New York. I wasn't in Newtown. You know, I wasn't in filling all the blanks in Aurora or, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's Portland.
Yeah, actually.
The
even
mall shooting and then California.
Even today, you know, that...
just this week I'm talking,
oh, yeah. You know, there was a song. I can't remember where it's from. Was it even as long ago as the 70s? A classic rock song called Ticking by Elton John, where he talks about, you know, this somebody holding up with an a young person with a whole automatic rifle. And it wasn't commonplace then.
Right.
And something is dreadfully amiss here. And I don't know.
Yeah.
Guns won't do it. More laws won't do it. What do we do?
That's the ultimate question. And, you know, this happened the night. I'm just going to throw it out there, because I invited a lot of people on my Facebook page to come on our show and talk tonight, Peter, because, you know, I'll open up things and then they'll go back and forth and back and forth. And I'll say, hey, listen, I'm opening this up. Call the show, right?
Okay.
And, the Michigan legislature passed this bill that, essentially allows guns in
schools
and churches, and the next day, this occurs. So I'm thinking, how are you feeling now about that, Republicans in the Michigan legislature? Shame on you. And I actually just got a little nastier on Facebook, but I'm going to withhold that right now.
Well, the right wing is all over that, and the gun nuts are all over the fact that that everybody would have been, I don't think.
If all those teachers were packing heat.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
There was some, I know you can't believe this, Texas congressman a Republican Texas congressman who said that the principal should have had an automatic weapon in her.
Just get her an Uzi.
Anyway, if you'd like to join us, Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan. It's Night Call. Our number is 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743. You missed me saying that, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I had to keep looking at my cheat sheet. I never can remember. I got a mental block on it. We have a Facebook page, which we'd like you to like, or at least go look at it. Facebook.com/Night Call. A lot going on there. A lot of articles posted about all of this, both about the Republican destruction of working class wages and standards and benefits and all
in
that,
the
or their attempt to. We'll see if that. And also, what happened today. There's a podcast that will be available on Monday. Well, actually, Jalene, you were just saying about all this. Well, here's just a couple of things in the last day. During a moment when the gun control debate is at the forefront of everybody's mind, the reports of a shooting in an Alabama hospital early Saturday morning aren't helping anything. There were no casualties, it says. According to multiple reports, a hospital employee alerted police to a man walking around the fifth floor of St. Vincent's Hospital when two hospital employees and a police officer got off the elevator to confront him. The gunman opened fire. The police officer and two employees were shot and injured before a second policeman came around the corner and killed the gunman. A northern Indiana man who allegedly threatened to, quote, kill as many people as he could at an elementary school near his home was arrested by officers who later found 47 guns and ammunition throughout his house, as well as they found $100,000. And here in Detroit, Detroit police are dealing with a barricaded gunman right now, I don't know if it's over or not, after a shooting over a parking space.
Angry much?
Yeah.
And of course, guns are going to solve everything in that case. You can't just, like, yell at each other and get it out, flip each other off and move on crying out loud.
Authorities in Orange County, and this is today, says some 50 shots were fired outside a mall in Newport Beach, California during the busy Christmas shopping season Saturday. Day after a 42-year-old man was in custody after the sound of gunshots at Fashion Island caused near pandemonium. Newport Beach police said the gunman fired some 50 rounds into the air and at the ground. Well, thank you. That's at least,
not at people.
And, you know, with all the people say everybody should arm everybody, you know. Well, where a lot of people are armed here in Chicago, not here in Chicago, but in Chicago, four people were shot and killed Friday night and Saturday morning. The fifth person, who may have been dead for days or week, was found with gunshot wounds. At least 11 others were wounded by gunfire and shootings from the Uptown neighborhood on the north to the Chatham neighborhood on the south. You know, one of the things that people that have this advocacy of everybody ought to be armed that don't realize, the more guns there are, the more mayhem there will be.
Right.
Let me just finish one thought. And that is, you know, that you think these good upstanding Superman types, there's going to be someone coming into a theater or a school or someplace like that.
Or a church or a church bar,
or wherever.
A
shopping mall, wherever all these are going on. And then the good person is going to make this heroic effort and stop it. Whereas, you know, people that you don't want to have guns increasingly have guns and can legally have guns. It used to be, you know, that the outlaws had illegal guns. Now they can get legal guns. There's no problem with it whatsoever.
And I think, you know, we've talked about this numerous times, and I think this is something that we really can't overstate enough, Peter, is statistically, if you have more guns in the hands of people, there will be more gun incidents. And I'd like anyone to call in and argue that.
Well, statistically,
and tell me how.
Yeah, statistically so. It's like driving.
Yeah.
If you drive 1,000 miles a year, you have...
Your chances increase.
As opposed to, say, driving 50,000 or 100,000.
Oh, okay, then they increase, yeah.
Well, and rather than addressing
statistically,
it...
Statistically, if you have a lot of sex, your chances are you're going to have a baby. Something like that. Statistically...
How do you always get back to sex?
Statistically, as the night goes on, the amount
You're beautiful when you blush, though.
I feel it on my face.
You're beautiful.
The amount of drunk drivers increase every hour until the wee hours. I am really blushing right now.
Obama, the gun grabber, has signed bills allowing guns in national parks and on Amtrak, and he has not pushed for the reinstatement of the assault weapons ban, although I think this is going to happen. Now, here's what this Republican said. He wished that the Sandy Hook principal, that's the school in Newtown, Connecticut, Representative Louie Gohmert, a Republican from Texas, says he wishes Don Hochsprung, the principal of the Sandy Hook Elementary School, was armed with an M4 assault rifle when she confronted Adam Lanza, the shooter who killed 20 children. Well, yeah, I mean, sure, you can wish that she would have had that. Maybe you can wish that, and if she...
She would have been in her office. The
yeah,
guy,
but I mean, how many... Yeah. No, but how many... Well, I mean, is this what everywhere has to be, this armed camp? That we're going to take our teachers, who we generally, and I certainly know that's not true with some of my friends, as being gentle people, right? Yes. Suddenly they're going to be these SWAT squads.
Right.
I don't think
Robo
that's going to happen.
Cops.
Here's what Representative... Louie Gohmert said, I wish to God she had had an M4 in her office locked up so when she heard gunfire, she pulls it out and didn't have to lunge heroically with nothing in her hands, but she takes him out, takes his head off before he can. I mean, this is the same mindset of the people that do the killing, as far as I'm concerned.
And even the folks out there who say that, I just lost my train of thought.
Well, here, he also said, that the founding fathers wanted the public to be armed to resist government tyranny. This guy is a moron. This is not true. There are great numbers of the founding fathers who did not trust the great masses of people even to vote.
Yes.
You had to be a white property male.
Right.
So they didn't want universal gun possession for, to be sure. He says it ensures the tyranny of the government if they know that the biggest army is the American people. Then you don't have the tyranny that came from King George. So this guy is making it up as he goes along. I just happen to have my constitution here.
And, how handy of you.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, by the way, actually stuck in here as well. Anyway, they're coming out of the woodwork right already. Mike Huckabee, former Arkansas governor and on Fox News, he says, we ask why there is violence in our school. Why do you think he says? Because we have systematically removed God from our schools.
Oh, of course.
So that's it. It's not that too many guns are in the hands of too many people that shouldn't have them. It's not that we have this culture of violence. It's not that we have more angry men than any country should ever have. It's not that that now that angry men acting out with gun violence is now the strongest statement of anger. You think about that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why all of a sudden you're seeing all this, because all these other guys that have so much resentment, so much anger, and everybody that's done wrong to them, wives, their kids, their neighbors, whatever. Somebody spilled their Pepsi.
Right.
Now, I'm going to show it. All right, you spilled my Pepsi, I'm going to go in and take out eight
people. I'm going to you up, right.
Yeah, for sure. Huckabee says, we don't have a crime problem. This was after Aurora. A gun problem or even a violence problem. What we have is a sin problem. I mean, we have ordered God out of our schools and communities, the military and public conversation. You know, we really shouldn't act so surprised. Well.
And by the way, that kid wasn't even a student at that school at the time.
And his mother was one of them. She was a survivalist. And
She was into guns.
She was a prepper. What the hell do they call it?
Not preppy.
No. They're.
This is a gun term?
Yeah, they were preparing for, I got everything messed up on my screen here now.
good luck.
Yeah. But you know, when all this God thing, I was just reading the Constitution. I know this, but I never looked at it. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, we've talked about that,
mm-hmm.
and secure the blessings of, blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity.
Lady Liberty.
Yeah, yeah. And, okay.
I can't believe that people are still, do you know that people are still on this whole Alabama Ten Commandments statue, trying to still get it up there in front
of the guy who put this, Judge Moore, he just got elected head of, that put this Ten Commandments mm-hmm. on the lawn, which is a violation of the Constitution.
The State House, right?
The state, yeah. He just was elected the head of the court down there.
Oh, my. I saw that pop up, and amazingly, it was with someone that I know. Or may I say, I thought I knew.
Well, we might get to, I have totally screwed everything up here on my screen. Let me see if I can get everything down.
And I have
here.
To say, yeah. Peter, you're pretty computer savvy.
I am. I don't know. You know, this all is very, like everyone else, this is very upsetting. I mean, how many people have just said, I've had a couple people say to me, I don't want to live in this country anymore. And, you know, I just said to...
Well, we are pretty damn violent here.
Well, yeah, you know what, though? Most of us aren't.
Right, but the rate of gun violence in this country
yeah.
is outrageous, really.
You're probably wondering.
Come on, stop.
Why am I staring at the screen? Because I'm trying to find our. Why didn't I do this earlier? Why are we on the air?
I'm going to try to come do it for you.
I don't think you can find this. I can't find our.
Peter.
What?
Talk to me.
Okay.
We're live and okay. we're on the air.
All right.
And we do have phone calls, okay. by the way, so be patient.
I might have to just take them straight off the air. When we come to a break, okay, you tell me if you can find assistant okay. Editor or producer or whatever it is. All right, give us a call, 313-298-WRIF. Try to stay away from some of the same tired old arguments and say, what are we going to do? You know, I'm telling you, I don't know if there is anything we can do. But there are some things. For instance, Senator Feinstein from California is going to introduce a bill that will, stop the sale of assault weapons. And that's good. And multiple magazines and all that. I mean, people don't need that. You know, they want it. You don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
And,
you're all set,
that?
Peter. You're all set.
Yeah.
Trust your old producer, Julie.
I don't know how you did it. But, I've totally, you know, actually, this has really kind of screwed me up. Can you tell?
Yeah, and it reminds me of the day that we broadcasted on 9/11 because we were both just like, at the time we were on at noon. I think it was noon,
right.
noon to three. And that happened around 9/11
right.
or 9/11. It was like right around between 9 and 9:30. And, it was, things were coming out. We didn't know what to say. And I think you and I were we were just flabbergasted.
Yeah.
Really.
And I don't, you know, maybe it's the magnitude of this, the number, but I think this is only the second largest. The first largest, what was 37 people killed at Virginia Tech.
Right. Well,
maybe because of such innocence.
This is actually something that I just remember the Bath, Michigan.
Right. That was with explosives.
1927, yeah, killing 45. And, no, that's not in front of me anymore. But
we're doing terrible radio. You folks got to, at least I am.
Here, never say you're doing terrible radio.
Look at. This is, we can be honest with our callers. We're a little discombobulated. I know what I was going to say. I was going to say that, and remember I said this once before, that in some ways, guns are like cars. Once the toothpaste is out of the tube, you can't get it back in. And the idea, for instance, I read an idea once that said that automobile accidents aren't properly described as accidents because we know that next year there's going to be, or this year, well, let's say next year, mm-hmm. there's going to be, I forgot what it's down to now, they about 18,000-20,000 automobile deaths, billions of dollars mm-hmm. of property damage, hundreds of thousands of catastrophic injuries. We know that's going to happen. And there wouldn't be any other machine like this allowed in, to be introduced now. If we said, it's going to kill all these people and all that. But one of the things that we've done with automobiles, because during like the 1940s and 1950s, it was like four times as many people wow. getting killed and all that. So they dealt a lot with highway design, you know, the seat belts, the steering wheels, airbags, campaigns against drunk driving. So they had like a lot of and you have to be licensed. You know, you have to go through this licensing mm-hmm. process. And so that they've reduced the amount of,
incidents.
Of deaths, from, automobiles. So, I don't think there's any way, there's like 300 million guns in this country so that no one's going to confiscate them. It would be
right.
impossible
no
to do so.
No one's taking any guns, don't worry.
Yeah. And yet, what I would like to hear from people is, what do we do with this?
Yeah, exactly. And all I keep hearing from, the deepest thing I've found is we need to come together and, form together and do something. Yeah. That's all. No one has anything, because what the hell do we do?
That's right.
Really?
All right, 313-298-WRIF.
How do we teach our children not to be violent?
Well, I don't know. How do we do that? I mean, well, just tell them they get a good education on that, watching television. No,
oh,
the opposite.
And all of those video games where you're killing people, don't tell me.
Well,
those
here
don't
is
get
the
into
other
some
thing.
People's brains. And there's mental illness. That's the big thing people are talking about as well.
Now, but even with it, here we got 99% of gun owners, maybe higher.
Who
never,
are fine.
They never use their weapons in a manner that's destructive.
They're not going to murder anyone.
So what... So should the 99% be regulated because of the 1%? That maybe let's don't answer that. Let's put that out.
We're throwing it out there.
What should we do? What should we do? All right, got a lot of people want to answer it. All the guys are ready to weigh in on it. Let's see. This is Robert and Howell. Robert, hi. It's Peter and Jalene. What do you think? You're on the air.
Hey, how are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing good.
Good. Hi.
Well, my take on all that is education. You guys are just talking about it. Where are kids learning? You know, you're not learning it in school that guns are anything about them, really. Other than they're bad, you know what I mean? And then you get a video game and you glorify it in movies, and that's the way these guys see it now. Why don't we educate these kids that, hey, look, man, this is a seriously dangerous tool, you know?
Tone down these video games? Can't they? Shouldn't there be regulations on those?
They've actually tried doing that before and came up against the First Amendment.
My kids would never have that. There is no way in hell.
But Robert, don't you think that there's a single person in this country that doesn't know the dangers of guns and what's happened? I mean, that's what is discouraging to me. I understand where you're coming from, and I like the sentiment. But I don't know. What can we tell people? Don't guns, you know, if you take them into a school and pull the trigger, you're going to kill a lot of people. I mean, I think that's why these people do it. And you know what I think also? The fact that this is rising as this horrendous social, what would you call it, like totem almost, encourages more people to act out.
Yeah, I agree. Eddie the Eagle program that they tried to introduce into schools that educate gun safety. I mean, I've got two kids that from the time they were 12 years old, they went through hunter safety and gun safety. Now, I have firearms. I keep them locked up in a gun safe. They're not loaded, you know. I store my gun safely, but I was taught that as a child, as a young kid, by my grandparents and my dad.
Let me ask you this.
Wait. One thing was this Adam... I'm blocking on his name.
Let's not even say his name.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean?
Well, he was trained in gun usage by his mother.
Everything that you just said, occurred in this family.
Right.
And you know, kids can find ways to get into those. I don't care what anybody says. I have someone I went to high school with, and last spring, her son got into a locked cabinet and killed himself with a gun.
Robert, let's do this. There's tons of people. All right, so education, let's put that out there as one important element.
It is important.
You know, just like you have driver ed, if you're going to use firearms, you should have some good education.
How about education is, you know, like gun statistics, gun violence statistics, effects of guns on society.
Well, yeah, I mean, but you would think, who doesn't, but the problem is, who doesn't know that? That's what
kids.
I mean. The kids
know
that. You got to believe that there could be 5,000 kids in the United States that saw that and went, that saw what happened in Newtown and said, that's cool. You think?
I don't want to believe it, but, you know, this is reality.
Well, it's a low percentage if you think how many, say, teens there are in the country.
That's so disturbing.
Yeah, it is. It is. All right, let's just go down the line here. Here's Mike way down in Bradenton, Florida. Hey, Mike, hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
How you doing, Jalene and Peter?
Hi.
Mike, hi.
Yeah, I guess I was watching MSNBC earlier tonight, and they had some guy that suggested that instead of instigating gun control, Barack Obama, instigating gun control, we should just pray to change the hearts of these individuals.
Oh, yeah, that's going to work.
As though that's going to do anything. That will not change a damn thing.
Not a damn thing.
Any idea? Well, I mean, I don't have any ideas what will change things.
I think it's too late at this point. There's already 300 million guns in this country. That's one for every each and every man and woman and child in this entire country.
A lot of people have a great number of them, like this guy that was going to kill as many people as he could in Indiana. He had 47 guns. So they're concentrated. And like we say, I mean, what do we deal? How do we deal with this insane 1% that people, rather than just,
We're talking about the 1% a lot in here, aren't we?
Yeah, the 1%. This is the 1%.
Gun owners.
You know, the vast majority of people in this country, it's not 99%, but the vast majority of people in this country are so nice and so cooperative and
good
so tolerant
people.
And so loving and so concerned about their families and the communities. So we're dealing with a small sliver of people that are not motivated by politics. I mean, a lot of people that have politics opposite of ours, I think, are making some horrible policy choices and are going to really hurt people. But they're not going out and killing people, not running into schools or shopping malls or stuff like that. How in the world do we deal with that?
You know,
thank you, Mike. Stay warm. I know you will down there in Braden.
Yeah, lucky. Yeah. I wonder what parents think, parents out there who have guns. What about if you kept your guns, like, at the gun store? Like, you got a locker at the gun store, and if you wanted to shoot your gun or you wanted to go hunting, you went there. I'm just talking about when kids get their parents' guns.
I think some countries do have laws like that. You actually have to keep them at the
somewhere
else. But that's not going to work here. And most people have.
But at least it would be a step here.
I know. When you find out who the serial killer is, what do the neighbors always say? Well, at worst, they say, well, he's a little odd. And some people say, well,
he kept to himself.
Yeah, kept to himself. And the same thing, I think most parents don't think, wow, their kids are going to go shoot up a school. I mean, they're always, can you imagine, we always talk about the parents of the victims, which is who we should concentrate on. But imagine carrying with you the idea that your son is a mass murderer
and you gave birth to that.
Yeah, and what did you do? How did you create this monster?
Yeah, exactly, But, you know, they can't blame themselves. It's just like parents that find out their kids are gay and what did I do? You know, it's you didn't do thing.
With the blame, and they're trying to find out what motivated Adam Lanza.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are they going to find out? You know, so what if they find out he played video games or he was just generally pissed off
or mentally ill
or, you know, and he thought this was where the Venusian space fleet was landing or whatever.
Right.
What do you do then? What does that tell you? I mean, the authorities, if you will, be no farther ahead of the game than we are right now trying to figure it out.
And how much focus should we be putting on the mental illness factor?
Yeah.
Really?
And I don't know. We don't know how, Adam, Lanza's mother kept the guns. As I said, she was a survivalist, and were they just laying around, or maybe she had them locked up?
Maybe she did.
And he just broke into it, so we don't know.
Right.
We don't know. A lot of people pay
gun stores. I'm telling you.
All right.
Lockers.
Lock boxes at gun stores.
Yeah.
Right.
Sign them out,
here's
whole thing.
Kevin in Northville. Kevin, hi. It's Peter and Jalene. Thanks for joining us on WRIF. You're on the air.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
You know, I just got back from the Christmas Jubilee down at the Masonic Temple.
Oh, was it rocking?
It was. It was pretty neat. Patti Smith did a heck of a job closing that show out.
Cool.
You know,
jealous.
Yeah, it was nice. It was nice. I'm glad I made the effort.
Good.
Hey, you know, Peter, you mentioned something interesting earlier about the superhero white Anglo-Saxon man with the gun. I know you didn't say white Anglo-Saxon, but the superhero guy with the gun.
Sure.
You know, it's just one of these myths that has been perpetuated since Teddy Roosevelt, you know.
The Rough Riders.
Yeah, and that's all a myth. That never happened, you know. So it's about how to disseminate all these intricate ideas and methods and know-how to be able to live a better life. God forbid I'm ever going to be around, you know, somebody that looks a little crazy. You try to get away from people like that.
Sure.
Sometimes they're in your family and you can't. So, you know, there's steps. And, you know, when people say, oh, what happened to my kid? Well, you know, times a kid's born and it's a short time in their life before they're 20. And then by then, you kind of hope you know them. And if you don't, who knows what's wrong. And love your show. Loved it for decades. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate it. And I think that Kevin articulated what a lot of us are feeling. We don't know what the hell to do.
Yeah.
And do we think this is going to stop by itself? Do we think, you know, there's people that increasingly arm everyone? And let's say that that would even... I mean, that's not happened anywhere else. The more guns there are, the more gun violence there is. Countries with the least amount of guns have the least amount of gun violence. I mean,
people,
it kind of figures out.
With me on
but
that
are,
one.
But we are a nation with 300 million people that, and we have a very small percentage of people that act out their rage against people that are not even involved. Sometimes they are. They'll kill all their family and all that. But this is
domestic violence.
Yeah. This is not usual in most countries that we give the big C to, the civilized country. Something is dramatically amiss. And partly, like in, you know, they, some of the people were saying, you know, that there has been this rash in China of, children being attacked with knives, and some guy just, wounded, 20 kids with a knife.
Yeah.
And the argument cuts both ways, you know, that if there's crazy people, they'll act out. But if you cut somebody with an 8-inch knife, which the guy had as opposed to this assault rifle, maybe the damage will be less.
Yeah.
But here, what do we do? I mean, because in a way, we're all at risk. I mean, we were talking about the damage that car accidents cause, deaths and injuries. And most of us probably even been in a car accident, small or big, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And
several.
And yet we get in our cars every single day, and we kind of hope that that some big semi isn't going to run a light, right? Or some guy's on his cell phone going 45 miles an hour down the side street is not going to run into you and all that.
Drunk driving.
So is that it? Do we just hope? I mean, we had one caller.
Is that all we have?
I think the only suggestion we've had so far is education.
Yeah,
and
which was just cool, depending on what it is.
Okay, we're going to take a break. More
Peter,
of your calls when we
right.
come back. I'm okay.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julene will be taking more of your calls right after this. WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Weekend brought to you by MIAT's College of Technology in Kent. Learn precision skills by attending classes at MIAT College of Technology in Kent. Classes start soon. Call 1-800-NEW-GOAL or click on MIAT.edu.
The Riff. Inhabitants of Earth, you can run, but you cannot... What are you doing?
I'm watching Netflix on my smartphone, dude.
What?
I can instantly watch as many TV episodes and movies as I want.
You don't fear for your life?
Yeah, not really. Our atmosphere is eventually going to kill you anyway.
Nonsense. Our anatomy is...
There you go. Faster than I thought.
Instantly watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on all kinds of devices for only $8 a month with Netflix. Start your free trial today. See terms of use.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
Thank you very much, and welcome back. As you can imagine, if you're just joining us, we're talking about the horrible shootings at Newtown. And there are so many suggestions of political changes that ought to occur, or that no changes ought to occur, mm-hmm. or what? And what Julian and I are asking, what's the solution here? And one caller said education. Everyone else is just sort of at a loss.
Yeah, I think that you know, just everyone's emotions are at an all-time high over this thing. I've talked to so many people who, and I would suggest turning off the television if you've been glued to it for the last 2 days.
I watched very, very little of it.
Yeah, me too. I can't do it.
I can't do it.
You know, and now all the pictures are out and all the I can't do it. And, I mean, like my own boyfriend is crying over this thing. Sorry, honey, but he is. And I keep trying to get him to turn it off, you know, and turn off the
television. It's really touching.
He has little kids, and so especially people with little kids.
I know.
I get it. I totally get it, but it's not healthy to watch this for hours on end. Yeah. I mean, you know, do what you have to do to heal. You can pray, you can write a letter, you can, whatever it is you do to personally help yourself heal. Do something for the people there. Raise money for the families. You know, take your energy and do something good. Don't sit there and watch that stuff.
President Obama was in Newtown today. He said he vowed to, quote, use whatever power his office holds to stop massacres like this slaughter at the school. It shocked the nation, hinting at a fresh effort to curb the spread of guns as he declared that there was, quote, no excuse for inaction. Well, he's been certainly inactive on that, whatever you think he should have been or shouldn't been. He said the country failed to protect its young and that its leaders could no longer sit idly by because, quote, the politics are too hard. Wow. So we'd like to know what you think, whether there's a solution here. I'm a little disheartened that there can be any solution. Senator Feinstein from California is going to introduce a bill on the first day of the new Congress that would, again, have an assault rifle ban, and that they won't be retroactive. It's not like they're going to go after people that already have them. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure in between the time or, in, you know, starting tomorrow, Monday, are we? Yeah, we're still in Sunday. On Monday, there is going to be an upsurge of buying of these. Yeah. And if the bill is introduced and actually comes close to passing, probably there'll be tens and tens of thousands of them. It'll probably wind up to have more people armed with them than if, so I don't know. Yeah. I don't know where the hell we're going. It is disheartening. I mean, maybe, like I started to say, it's like automobile accidents. We just hope we're not in the car that gets, hit by the drunk driver or the cell phone user.
Right.
All right, let's go back to our phones. Thanks for your patience on all of this. Here's Tim in Belleville. Tim, hi, it's Peter and Jolene. Thanks for calling.
Hi.
Hi.
I want to second the education, but I'm not talking about formal education in school. You know, there's kind of been a long chain of events here in the last 30 years, and part of it is that wages haven't gone up with the cost of living. Now, if that had happened, then a lot of moms would be at home and not out looking for a job. That would also cut the unemployment rate in half.
Well, there is.
But there are also a lot of women who want to go to work.
Yeah.
Just to throw that out there.
Yeah, and there's and also though, a country that's heavily under stress, that's in constant wars, that where economic insecurity is so great, where families don't seem to be able to hold together in a manner that they had in other eras, although, you know, other eras were pretty violent, too, 1840s and places like the old Wild West.
Yeah.
But we thought we'd left that behind, hadn't we?
Well, I think, I said, the education that you get at home, the first 6 years of your life are so formative, are so important to a child, and if they learn then that, you know, look at what kids are learning when they're sitting at home. That, yeah, violence is the answer. That's how you get what you want. You have to teach people that that is not how you get what you want.
I'm going to go as far as to say that I don't believe in spanking children. I think when they're those little beings and you're spanking them, you're teaching them that violence is the answer. It starts very young, and that's a big hot button topic. Do people seriously still spank their children? I got my butt whooped when I was a kid. I remember. It was horrible.
Look how you turned out.
Listen, it didn't make any damn difference.
All right. Thanks, Tim. Appreciate your comments. Yeah. All right. Let's see. Here is John. John's in Roseville. John, hi. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing good.
Hey, I've got so much to say on so many different topics, but I want to start off, first of all, by saying, you know, your question is, what do we do about this?
Yeah.
The first thing I'd like to state is that you cannot have a knee-jerk reaction to try and control what a crazy person does. Crazy people don't follow the laws. So if you try and make laws to control crazy people, it doesn't work. All you do is restrict the sane people, the law-abiding citizens.
So are you saying that, people saying that the principles or, you know, more people should be armed isn't going to work? Is that what you're saying?
Well, let me, I'll go back to the Virginia Tech. You mentioned Peter, you mentioned the Virginia Tech shootings. I believe it was the third person that the gunman ran across had weapons training and self-defense training. But because of the laws that are in place that you cannot carry a weapon on school property, he was unable to defend himself. He had his gun locked in his car and could not defend himself. Had he run across this gunman as the third person, he may have been able to defend himself and either shoot or wound or kill or stop the threat of this person. And
well, you know, I've heard that
argument back when it happened.
I've heard this argument a lot, and it's very possible. I mean, if you would have had, for instance, the principal just would have happened of Newtown would have just happened to have been someone who had arms training and carried a weapon in her purse. Maybe she could have taken this out. But people in a situation, no matter they've had rudimentary arms training, and they've gone, you know, to classes on safety and all that, aren't really the best people to react in a situation of mass violence like that. Like people were saying that around the Aurora shooting, if everybody would have had a gun, if there would have been six people in that theater with guns, they probably would have all shot each other. And it's very possible.
Yeah, it was kind of dark in there.
Yeah, these if-come questions are, I mean, what you're saying then, that it would make sense for lots of people to have guns everywhere. Well, that does not make me feel more safe. It makes me feel less safe. And I gotta tell you, John, if you and I are in the theater or in a restaurant or whatever, and I know you have a gun, that does not make me feel safer. That makes me feel more at risk.
Well, Peter, let's run another scenario by. If you were in the movie theater, And a gunman walks in, your only option is to flee.
Right.
And if he wants to kill as many people as he possibly can, where is he going to shoot?
Well, so what are you saying? That everybody that goes to the theater, every teacher, everybody, I mean, what, you know, maybe you're,
to live that way.
Maybe you're, yeah, that's the point. Maybe you're even right. Maybe, although it would increase gun violence and homicides and suicides if more people had more guns, that maybe in mass situations like that, perhaps, I'm not even granting you that, we'd be more safe, but what kind of country do we live in, and why do we have to do that? Why do we, you know, are we back to stockades again?
No, I hope not. But Peter, on that whole movie theater thing, if your only choice is to flee, if you could take cover, if he walks up on you, you're going to be dead. So your best bet is to flee. If you were able to carry a concealed weapon, first of all, it takes training to get your concealed weapons permit. Me as a sane person, I am responsible for every bullet that leaves the barrel of my gun. So if I do not have a good shot, I am not going to take it. There was a mall shooting.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, John, that's what you're saying. But who the hell knows how you or I would react if that all of a sudden some guy in a mask started spraying the audience with semi-automatic fire.
Right.
But let me ask you this:
fight or flight syndrome kind of takes over.
I mean, you've kind of given me this anecdotal situation about the third man killed by the Virginia Tech shooter. Is that, and kind of give me a summary sentence, and I'll let you have the last word. Are you saying that that part of the solution would be to have more armed people around in every circumstance in our society?
Well, people are armed in every circumstance. There's that bill that House Bill 59 that's going through, and the big worry is that will allow guns on school property and in daycare centers. Guns are already allowed there. You can carry a gun on school property right now if you have your concealed weapons permit and you openly display that gun. So you can open carry there, but you cannot conceal carry.
Oh my God. You know what? Where's the bus leaving for the next planet? All right, John. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'm not criticizing you or anything like that. I know what you're saying.
It's very disheartening. Overwhelming.
Yeah. We're going to go into a daycare center, and I'm going to go in there to get my my kid
with an open carry.
And I want to have a Glock in a holster. Or no, but now we have a new law thanks to these Republican morons who are trying to do everything they can at the last moment to destroy the fabric of the state of Michigan. that, you know, that we're going to have, you know. And you know what? I mean, I even hate to
it's
say
like we're
this.
We're becoming Alabama-y
yeah,
over here.
Yeah. I got to tell you. And, well, let me see. I hope I'm not opening them up. But I have guns in my house, okay? I mean, a lot of my liberal friends, they're shocked that I have. Mm-hmm. And
well, it's not like you collect them, Peter.
Well, I don't collect them. I have them for only one purpose, and that's home defense.
Right.
And I don't want to make any statements about what I do when I leave here or what my condition is.
Yeah.
But I'm prepared at all times to take care of myself and my family, my friends, and my community. Yeah. Right?
I got a big scary boyfriend. I don't think anyone would mess with him.
On the other hand, 99% of the time in my life, I want those babies locked up completely. It would never occur to me to go out with one, you know, strapped to my waist or hidden away when I'm going to the movies, when I'm going to a shopping mall, when all
of
that.
Well, what about the opera or the symphony? Come on, Peter. You got to protect yourself.
A rock concert. Hey, man, you spilled my Pepsi.
You spilled my beer.
So I don't know what to say. Because these are deadly little instruments. And when I got them, you know, what's the Beatles song? I can't remember the words. When I hold
happiness is the warmth.
Yeah, when I hold in my
the trigger
hand, in my
in
hand,
my finger.
Yeah, like that.
Something like that.
It you know, and I go out to rifle range and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It kind of creeps me out. You know, I know a lot of you are gun enthusiasts, your collectors, your hunters, target shooters, what have you.
Yeah.
And you like that. And I'm not, you know, this is a matter of choice. But I think that the odds of me being jeopardized in the normal course of life is so low compared to the kind of vibes that it gives
creates.
You
with
this little baby, in a holster in your, inside of your coat.
Mm-hmm.
Is just more than I want to deal with, but that's me. That's me. You may be somewhere else. You know, I would sure, and there's no chance of it now, I'd sure like to talk about all this right-to-work laws and all that, but I don't think we can do it.
Well, you know.
Too much on this. Here's Michael in Fenton. Michael, hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, how's the dog, Julian?
I this is terrible. I hate to say this, but my dog didn't live.
Yeah, I had a feeling. Yeah. Well, sorry to hear that.
Thanks for asking, though.
Yeah, well, that's a dog, and these were little children.
Yeah.
Still
a dog.
Yeah, it's very serious. I don't think the gun's the problem. You know, it's not the education. We think about ourselves, my gun, and I'm going to protect myself. And I think that God's not in the school and all these different things we think, but that's not what we're supposed to be doing. We're always supposed to be thinking of others. And if we're doing that, we're not going to go in there and shoot nobody because we're thinking about what we're supposed to do is to help them, be good to them. So when we see these people that are having these problems, we're not supposed to run away and say they're a little weird or this or that or whatever. We're supposed to do something about it and make that person a better person.
Well, there are so many people in such distress in this society, and I see
and
them so
snap.
Frequently. And they snap.
That's
they're
the
just
thing.
They're just a little weird, and then they snap. But there's people that are such suffer such obvious distress who thinks they're going to do that? They're going to they're unhappy, or they're always complaining, or the guy is always shouting at the neighborhood kids, or the kid
is
weird. You know, he never leaves his computer, and he's playing weird games. You know, I mean. That's millions of people, millions and millions and millions of people. Mental illness in this society is another epidemic. So we're not hung together well. So, the idea, you know, that book that Julian and I often mention by Greg Palast, which is Armed Madhouse. And as I keep saying, the vast majority of us aren't mad, aren't even angry. Mad in the sense of being mentally ill or insane or something like that.
We have moments, but not that.
The vast majority, up towards 100% of gun owners don't do anything that they shouldn't with them.
Right.
But there's something really wrong in, I don't know what to say, in the core of this country, but like I say, everybody that I deal with, I don't mean to say, people don't have conflicts and everything like that, but I just think the people here at work, the people in my block club, our block club. I'm trying to think where else. People I play sports with.
Right.
You know, all of that. They're all good
people.
Even
people we protest with.
Yeah.
They're actually some of the best.
Sorry. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate you calling in. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Daryl in Romulus. Daryl, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. What I want to say is I'm against the right-to-work law. I want to ask Snyder where are all these jobs he's promising us. My dad, your dad, everybody else's dad did a lot of sweat and blood to get unions in.
Right.
In a matter of one swipe of a pen, he broke everybody's back.
Well, here's the good news about it, Daryl. I mean, yeah, the Republicans and Snyder. Well, yeah, in a way. No, the bad news is that that Snyder signed it. The awful news that these Republicans held without holding a single hearing, without giving taking a minute of testimony, just passed this anti-worker, anti-middle class, anti-working class, anti-union bill. The only good news is that all of these bills, the abortion bill that they
limiting
passed,
limiting abortion,
the weapons bill. All of that. They're written so badly that they are so open to court challenge. Now, here is the deal. I mean, when you have a Republican in the state house saying, we're passing this so-called right to work law, it's really a right to mooch, and I'll just talk about that in a second. But that when you have these Republicans that are saying, we're doing this because we care about the freedom of the worker, is there one among you that actually believes that?
Well,
that,
probably people who don't believe in unions.
Well, even if you don't believe in unions, you think unions are awful, do you really think these Republicans passed this bill because they're concerned with the workers' rights or freedoms or what have you?
Absolutely
not. Do you
not.
Really think that they passed a law limiting abortion because they want to help make cleaner, safer places for women in which to have abortions until they can abolish it? Here's the moocher deal real quickly, people, because I got to go to a break in just a second. This right to work is just a nonsense. That when you sign a contract in states that don't have this so-called right to work, and like 52% of you say, yes, we want a union, 48% say they don't, well, then it's the union gets in, and it's a so-called union shop. Just like when Barack Obama wins 53% of the vote, he is the president of everyone, whether you wanted him or not. But you have the secessionists that are, you know, these people, well, I don't know. But the moochers that want to belong to a union are the crafty tools of the employers, like the Republican Party is, what they want to be able to do, they want to weaken the union. And the mooching thing comes in that, okay, so say you have Michigan now, if they could implement it, would have a right-to-work law situation. So you got 48% of the people that say, well, you know what, I'm not going to pay dues because so what? You know, I don't have to. It's not a union shop. Well, guess what? The union still will bargain for your wages and benefits, for your medical. They will give you a grievance procedure. You get all the benefits of a union, and you don't have to pay dues.
Exactly.
That's called mooching. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
If you're like me, you probably had to do something hard today. I mean, personally, I hate washing out socks. That's why we made Geico.com so exceedingly easy. Easy to see how much you could save on car insurance. Easy to review and update your policy. Change of address. Just a few clicks and you're done. Visit Geico.com today because life is hard enough. I mean, I don't even wear socks.
Sailor Jerry Spiced Rum is made in honor of Norman Sailor Jerry Collins, undisputed father of the old school tattoo and a true independent spirit. Distilled in support of craft, liberty, and whatever the hell you wish to pursue. Made the old school way, 92 proof, bold and smooth as hell. 46% alcohol by volume. Bottled by Sailor Jerry Rum, Edison, New Jersey. Respect his legacy. Drink Sailor Jerry Rum responsibly.
Well, ladies, there's a new secret weapon in the fight against cellulite, and it was developed right here by Dr. Michael Gray of the Michigan Cosmetic Surgery Center and Skin Deep Spa. Dr. Gray, what's this new secret weapon?
I call it Cellulize. This procedure breaks up irregular fat that sits just below the skin surface. With it, I can help you more effectively reduce this cellulite, and you can look absolutely amazing.
So how does Cellulize break up the fat?
Using a laser, fat is fine-tuned, smoothed, and molded. The heat from the laser also causes tightening of the surrounding skin and tissue. This procedure, together with Dermosonic, refines and shapes the fat, creating fantastic results.
So how does a person get in touch with you to discuss having this new procedure?
You can come in for a complimentary consultation. We'll discuss your situation and review your options. Together, we will begin the transformation to the new, more beautiful you.
For your complimentary consultation with Dr. Gray, call 248-538-3333 or visit anewyou.com.
I'm Dr. Michael Gray. Call me today and I'll see you tomorrow.
How would you like to see customers through your door today and the next day and the day after that? I have the answer you're looking for. RiffDeals.com. Hey, you're online now. Just click on the banner in the player window to find out more. Remember, there's no upfront cost to you. It's a partnership with your success as the goal. WRAF's marketing pros work with you to develop the perfect deal. Then RiffDeals.com uses the power of on-air, online, and social media marketing to help you reach new customers. Oh, did I mention that you get a check within 10 days of your successful deal running? That's cash in your pocket and customers in the door.
The craving for chocolate is all grown up.
That's Jared!
Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry presents Levion chocolate diamonds and chocolate-cultured South Sea pearls. From ancient royalty to today's red carpet, Levion is the only company on Earth to make jewelry with chocolate diamonds, including exclusive designs you'll only find at Jared.
It can only be Jared!
Find a Jared store or shop anytime at Jared.com.
Attention smokers, it's starting to get cold out there and there's nothing worse than having to go outside to smoke. There is a solution. With Bulldog electronic cigarettes, you don't have to be left out in the cold. Bulldog is a more convenient alternative to smoking tar-based cigarettes and can be smoked virtually anywhere, inside and out. They'll save you thousands of dollars and they have the same taste and feel as the real deal. Log on to FreeBulldogEcig.com. That's FreeBulldogEcig.com for your free WRIF sample and to check out all their products. Just pay for shipping. Limited product samples available, so act fast. FreeBulldogEcig.com or 1-877-666-3333. The better alternative.
Hello.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Listening for your next chance to jet off to London, England with your Detroit Pistons. Learn more online at WRIF.com. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
Thank you very much. It's our second hour. If you're just joining us, I know you can imagine what we've been talking about. The tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut. We're just all so shocked. And we've been talking, how do we prevent this? What can we do? And, I mean, a couple people have said education. Mm-hmm. I can't believe that's going to cut into anything. One caller intimated, at least, that if there was a little more armament among the general population, that people would be safer. Cody writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He said, I don't know if you've heard, but the people at the Westboro Baptist Church, you know, those people that picket the funerals of the
military.
Yeah, are planning to picket at Newtown. They claim to have full trust in God's judgment. They're saying, you know, probably, yeah, same thing with, you know, they say God hates, I can't remember. But he wants dead soldiers or something like that.
Yeah, well, they say God hates, you know, a bad word, a derogatory word for gays.
And Cody said, I just want to throw up when I hear that people like this are still out there and in large numbers. Well, here's the good news. They're not large numbers.
It's small numbers, but they get a lot of attention.
Yeah, because here all of us are, we got these extraordinarily raw feelings about this. So just...
The KKK, I just read something earlier, the KKK is going to protest the Westboro Church.
Wow. And then I heard that this anti-racist group is going to picket the Klan.
Oh, God.
But
this is insane.
Cody writes, thankfully, human barriers are already being planned and Anonymous is attacking their website. Anonymous are the people that take down websites of people they don't like.
Right. Yeah. Now, we're talking about solutions, possible solutions to gun violence in this country as a whole.
Yeah.
And Winston Smith wrote in, the solution to the violence problem is obvious and assured. Legalize marijuana and encourage its use. There's little question about the result of that. Huh. All right.
And
everyone will be chilled out, right?
Patrick's listening in Mount Clemens. He says, Peter and Jolene, the sale of Bushmaster, which are, you know, one of the automatic weapons he had, are through the roof, according to the news after Friday's terrible incident. I think this says how deeply screwed up this country is and the stranglehold the NRA has on its citizens, not to mention the politicians. Yeah, I would say the NRA has a lot of complicity for the atmosphere that's been created here. I mean, anyway, until we have a new mindset in this country, I fear these tragic, senseless massacres will continue. I think the only way it can possibly be done is by politicians with a backbone who aren't bought and paid for by lobbyists. Easier said than done in this country. I don't have any thought that that's going to happen.
I know a lot of people are like, the other day, it's too soon to talk about this kind of thing, but I'm just going to say for the record, you know, we are completely compassionate about the situation. We're talking about it because this is a political talk show, and this is something that we talk about every week.
Yeah. I mean, we could. Probably the correct human response is just to cry.
Yeah, well.
But it doesn't make good radio, I guess.
Look at those pictures, and you will. It's horrible.
Well, I haven't even looked at the photos.
I started
to see on the front page of the New York Times a list of the children, and I just flipped. I couldn't even bear to look at it.
Couldn't do it.
Yeah. This is from Gila in Farmington Hills, writes the calltalkyes@yahoo.com. John called in and intimated that if people had weapons and were trained that maybe they could cut down. He says, this caller is ridiculous. She says, this is insane logic. More guns are not the answer. I don't want that, especially in daycare centers and schools.
Mm-hmm.
I
would never send my kids to any.
Think about this, people. You say, oh, well, I don't agree because if someone had a daycare center or a school would have had a gun. We are debating. We are debating whether or not people at school should be armed. And this is what it's come to.
That's pure insanity, really.
That's what it's come to. Winston Smith, a familiar name for readers of 1984. The notion of arming teachers is rooted in ignorance, as are most suggestions made by anti-gun proponents. Having a gun does not impart the ability to, maybe he meant pro-gun proponents.
But I think that's what he meant.
Having a gun does not impart the ability to use it effectively in an armed confrontation, and the training required to qualify to deal with armed suicidal assassin must be exhaustively repetitive because it calls for reflexive action. In simple terms, one must be a gunfighter, and with very few exceptions, that teacher, the teacher mentality is not compatible with the designation. So what do we do? We don't know. All right. Well, there's tons more emails, but this is a phone-in talk show. So let's see if we can get some more people on the air. Here is David in Detroit. David, hi. It's Peter and Jolene. Thanks for joining us.
Hi to the two of you. I want to cover quickly two topics. One, I have to differ with you on in a point that you made on right to work. But first, I want to acknowledge those babies. And it really upsets me that obviously that happened, but even more so, you're looking for answers. And the way I'm seeing it is it's two things. You're looking at mental illness and you're looking at immorality, either or, and it doesn't really matter which. So you have to deal with those two in the appropriate manner. And either way you think about it, it's not going to happen legislatively. And for me to have to listen to my leaders politicize this either on the left or the right with their political answers, and those babies haven't even been buried yet, sickens me. So I think you just have to look at those two issues, and you have to decide what the best way to handle both those issues are, be it the mental part or the immorality part. And really it starts with the home, but I think you just tackle it from that perspective. But either way, it's not going to happen politically. So.
Well, you know, David, people have been saying, I don't know, maybe forever. It always begins in the home. And whenever there were, you know, great crime waves in this country at different periods, 1890s and all that, people talked about the home and the family. And it's usually comes about through a society that is more loving and fairer, and actually that has government policies that ensure that people are waged well, that there's not discrimination, that people are not bullied, ethnically or, you know, by race and all that. So anyway, I mean, we disagree, but go ahead. What about the other topic?
Well, with Right to Work, I was there. I was there for both the Thursday and the Tuesday rally. And I asked the question both days. You may have seen pictures. There were plenty of press there. I was standing on the steps engaging the union workers and asking them, how many of you have actually read the bill? And, of course, not one raised their hand. They just simply said, you know, their shop steward told them or their committee men told them what was in it. It was horrible.
Well, you know what? I hate stuff like this, David. You're so smart. They're so dumb. They're just following their, you know, shop stewards. These guys are pretty damn savvy. Anybody in the union and all union activists are pretty. You know what? I haven't read the whole bill. Besides telling me how smart you are, what's in the bill that's...
You don't have to read the whole bill to know what it has done historically in other states.
Yeah, I mean, it lowers wages, it lowers benefits. Every state that has a right to work law doesn't get new jobs. And you know what? I'm not even sure that they're going to allow this big employers. Like, you think that Chrysler, who brought all these jobs here and worked with Bob King and the United Auto Workers, is saying, oh, great, we can have a right to work shop now, or we can have an open shop? You know, they didn't apply it to the police or to fire. You know why they didn't want it? Because they said, we don't want to cause strife in the police station or in the firehouse. Because they realize that is a guarantee, is that workers are going to be fighting among themselves, which is exactly why they put it in there, to weaken the unions. And you think Chrysler wants, acrimony among their workers in their plants?
No, I think you're right about one aspect of this bill, is that, you know, it was more political than it was anything else. And I agree with that. And for me, being a union worker that's more on the conservative libertarian side, I'm not real thrilled about just this year alone. Let's just say that the union that's supposed to protect my work environment, protect me and what have you, is more focused on the political side of things and spending almost $59 million on just this past year's election. How would you feel
as a union worker if you knew that $59 million was going to Romney's campaign?
Well, let me tell you that I am a union worker. I'm a union member. This is not a union shop here, but I am a, if I do freelance work or what have you, and I've worked in union, I've worked at radio stations that did have unions. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Hey, David, you can opt out. You can say you do not want that proportion that the, of your dues that the union allocates to protect itself from the ravages of the Republican Party that are bound and determined to destroy your union, and with it the wages that people have fought and died for. So you don't have to pay. And would I feel terrible if my union and other unions? I just talked to a friend of mine who's in the Carpenters. The Carpenters endorsed Snyder in the last election. He was furious. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. We're going to leave it there. Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay. Well, let's get a time thing on here. We'll get people that have been on the longest. Regina from East Point. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you, friends?
We're good.
My subject is that, you know, this whole thing is because there's so much mental illness in our society. They just throw them in jail, and that's the problem. That's the solution. You know what? They cut everything in Michigan, and I have two sisters that are bipolars out of seven, and I deal with it every day. And if they keep cutting the mental health system, this shit's going to happen all the time, honey. You know? And that they did it in Michigan, they're doing it everywhere.
Well, that's the cutbacks, yeah. I mean, but this has been going on for a long time.
The mental hospitals, as far as that goes, they've been closed down.
They've closed.
You've driven by any of those, you see they're just empty.
Yeah, and so we don't take care of our own. You know, the Bruce Springsteen song, we take care of our own.
I posted that the other night, Peter.
But we don't. As a society, we don't take care of our own enough. Yeah. All right, Regina, thank you.
Elderly, women, children, mentally ill, the poor. This is what this country should be doing much better than they're doing.
Here's Rick in Farmington Hills. Hey, Rick, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. And by the way, there are some open lines now, so go ahead. First time.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Good evening, guys.
Hi.
I want to speak two times. First on the right to work. I lived in Nevada. It was a right to work state. And what it meant there is, the companies that hire you, they have the right to fire you. That's the right.
Yeah, without any of that union protection.
You don't have to be in the even if you are in the union. If they don't want you, they will fire you and bring people in to cross the line.
Yeah, so, well, they've always done that. But what do you think, Rick, about the Republicans say they're doing this because they support workers? That's why they're
the Republicans are the ones that own these factories, and they're greedy.
Yeah.
Look at Snyder. Snyder had that big company up there. What did he do? He closed it down.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I'm also in SAG-AFTRA. I'm an actor.
Yeah.
Granholm set up for the biggest machine to come here, put Michigan on the map. They came in here. They put $250 million into the system. They put jobs in. Carpenters, electricians, people that had stuff that they could use. They trained people to do things. What did he do? He saw that he couldn't put his hand in the pot, so he told them, hey, well, you can only make $25 million. How are you going to tell the biggest money-making machine in the world what they can't do?
Right.
When they came here and gave you. Everybody was working. Everybody was happy. But, hey, here he come. And he talk about he's a nerd. No, he's not a nerd. He's a... I'm not even going to say
it. If he's a nerd, he's a greedy nerd.
Yeah, you know what, Rick? We're union brothers.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. You guys are on the SAG-AFTRA and stuff. That's right. So you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And getting back to the... the sad thing that has happened.
Let me. I'm sorry. This is more important, but I just with these initials might. AFTRA is the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. SAG is a Screen Actors Guild, and they just recently merged as one union. But I'm sorry, Rick. Go ahead.
On this the shooting thing. You know, it's real funny. What pisses me off. I'm so sad in my heart at this time of the year that babies have died. But what pisses me off is this person that did it was out there in armor. And they say when he heard the sirens coming, he shot himself. Well, if you're going to kill little kids, why don't you take the consequences? You got on armor. Why don't you stand up and show us how it's really done?
Or why didn't he commit suicide first?
Yeah, why you commit suicide? All these them boys in Columbine commit suicide. This commits suicide. One in Virginia Tech commits suicide. The only one that stayed around was the one at the movies, and he probably was too scared. So, I mean, and then they want to say autism. Come on, you got to know how to load an M16.
Yeah, well.
I've never seen anybody with no autism know how to mess with no guns.
Well, you know what, Rick, though? I mean, it just seems something thoroughly, I don't know, corrupt in our spirit. And I don't want to put it off like some collective guilt. It's like, you know, you and me and our neighbors and your neighbors and all that, somehow we're responsible for this. But the fact that this keeps happening over and over again, and, you know, people talk about, for instance, the idea that if more people had more guns and more training, and we'd be, you know, safer. But this doesn't talk to or speak to why are there so many people that are motivated like that? And you can say, like I've been saying, you know, there's millions of people with millions and millions of guns, and it's only you can count the people that do this, you know, in probably the, you know, the two figures. James Holmes, I'm just told, tried to kill himself, but allegedly the gun jam. All right, Rick, I got to move on. Thank you, my union brother, and maybe we'll, huh?
Who?
The guy we're talking to. He's in After Say.
No.
James Holmes, the theater killer, the Aurora.
Oh, theater.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Maybe we'll meet one of these days, I hope.
For sure.
Yeah. All right. Here is Bill. Bill's in South Lyon. Thanks for calling, Bill. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. How's it going?
Going good.
You're saying about the guy that was saying about if more people had guns. To an extent, I kind of agree with him a little bit. And about this thing that happened in Connecticut, like if the principal maybe or somebody in the school was qualified, trained, and knew how to handle a situation, or even if there was a cop or a liaison officer that was actually in the school, I don't think it would happen. Like if more, I think it all boils down to, because I agree with you, I don't want people just Joe Schmo just having a gun, but if I think what it kind of boils down to is that people kill people, not guns kill people. So,
well, you know the
boy,
answer
we ever
to that,
hear that one.
Yes,
we hear that one a lot.
People with guns kill people, and the more, you know, if there were the kind of if people were kind of all, the only thing they had access to were like you know, single action shotguns and a revolver, you know, like a .38 revolver. They, you know, I think this guy shot like a, you know, 100 times. So one of the bills that's going to
with three weapons.
Yeah, one of the bills that's going to be introduced would be to limit the kind of magazines that people have, so they don't have these 100 clip magazines and these barrel magazines and all that. And what Senator Feinstein says is we've got to get the weapons of war out of the hands of the people. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen by her bill. I don't know whether you were listening earlier, Bill, but I said that. As it is, that Bushmaster sales have just skyrocketed, and as soon as Senator Feinstein made that remark, I'm sure tomorrow that Bushmaster and Colt and the rest of them, as it is, they can't keep up with the amount of ammunition that the American people are buying.
Is that so?
There's a sector, there's a shortage. There's a sector of Americans that that guns either represent something or are something or are these totems or what have you. And as I said, this bill could almost have the opposite effect. It might arm more people.
Right, in the end.
Yeah, because they're not talking about taking away anybody's guns. That's not on the agenda.
Well, that makes sense.
All right, Bill, thank you very much. So, again, what does it do? You know, well, I mean, yeah, I'm sorry. Actually, I should have said a little more to you. A lot of bills here. We're talking about bills introduced into Congress. Bill just called us. But Bill Bennett, who is this right-wing Republican who was the Secretary of Education, he said that there ought to be a trained armed guard at every single school. I mean, again, what kind of country do we live in, you know?
You know, maybe.
Yeah. In a lot of Detroit schools, a lot of urban schools, they have security guards.
Yeah.
So this, rather than this being a society, rather than this being a community, we have to arm ourselves. I mean,
everywhere.
All right. What if we do? What does that say? I don't know. Let's see. Here's Paul. Paul's in Plymouth. Hi, Paul. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, Peter. I just wanted to make a quick comment on your last caller before I get to my main point. Back in 1995 or 1996, Livonia Public Schools actually has an armed officer in every school. It's been going on for quite some time.
Really?
Okay.
Yes.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Do you know what led up to it?
It's before this trend. I don't want to call it trend because that's kind of morbid, but before these kind of incidents kept compounding,
mm-hmm.
they thought it was a good idea.
Well, maybe right. They would. They said the Connecticut, every school has a lockdown program, evacuation program.
You have to buzz to get in.
Yeah, that was locked. The guy blew the
glass open.
Yeah, with his gun. And that only deals, of course, with schools, which are important. And yeah, again, and we may have to do that. And I don't know. I guess if I had children in a school and someone said, well, we're thinking about putting an armed guard there, I would say, yeah, go for it. Yeah.
I would too.
I would have to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't know what that says about our country. I mean, do you think about, I don't know. I mean,
other countries?
Yeah. All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
What I called about is that there's something I think people are failing to recognize that I saw from a family member who was mentally ill back in the late 70s, was back in the Northville State Hospital system over there. And in the late 70s into the 80s and 90s, we have closed down all the mental hospitals in the United States.
We have.
And I think I saw a relative get booted out of there, go to prison, get booted out of prison. There was nobody to treat these people.
Right.
And I think maybe that's a discussion we should have before we start taking the guns out of my hands.
Probably about 50 years ago, more than 50 years ago, there was this psychologist named Eric Fromm, mm-hmm. F-R-O-M-M. And he wrote this book called The Sane Society. And he said, if individuals manifested much of the behavior present in American society, that they would be declared either psychopathic or criminally insane. And that was, 1960. And so we're doing something wrong as a society. I'm not trying to say that we have to deal with that. We should have publicly funded hospitals that deal with people. We may need an armed guard. But I just want to know, why is there this small percentage of people that have such anger or such illness that
wired differently?
What is triggering this? What triggers a person to walk in and kill 20 innocent kids that had done nothing?
Right.
Can I say one more thing, Peter?
Sure.
Like my dad and my grandfather always shared, back in, I don't know if anybody remembers, Bentley High School in Livonia was kind of the main high school that, everybody kind of went to. A lot of generations of my family went there before it turned into a rec center. They used to have, my dad had to bring a rifle to school there, my grandfather's rifle, and they had a shooting class. Nobody was walking around the school shooting up the place. Maybe it's time to put education about firearms back into our public school systems.
Without bringing the rifle.
Yeah, I know. You can, I'm trying to think of the name of this town. I was looking at their weekly newspaper, and the whole centerfold of it was, I don't know, they maybe had photographs of maybe, I'm trying to think how many people, it could have been 40, all people there with their gun and their deer. So, and I don't think those people are shooting each other, that's for sure.
Right.
All right, hey, Paul, thank you very much. Appreciate your call.
See, wasn't it? Let's see, Dick Cheney, remember that?
Dick Cheney, yeah.
Remember the hunting incident? Yeah.
Here's Brian and Clyde. Brian, hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, what's going on, Peter? Hey, my deal with this guns is You immediately ban the AK-47 round and the .223 round. You ban the assault weapons round. You don't make it illegal to have. You want it, you press it in your basement. You go to your gun club, you make them one at a time. That way they have the right to bear their arms, but you have to make your own ammunition. You're talking stats. I'm not going to argue. You own guns. You're dangerous. It's dangerous. You're going to get killed if you own guns. That's just the numbers. Jolene's right. The numbers, they don't lie.
Thank you.
You know, and I'll tell you, Brian, you may have seen this, that apparently that Adam, keep blocking his name, so tough, that the Connecticut shooter, he had hundreds and hundreds of rounds of ammunition. And, for what? I don't know. Well, I think
his mom was a survivalist.
His mother was.
Is there anything to that?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's the whole educating your kids about how to properly handle guns. Well, he got highly educated in that. That's all I'm going to say.
And one of the things that I'll tell you, Brian, that we don't talk much about, the proliferation of guns also means a proliferation into violent subcultures in which we usually don't want people to have guns in. It's like I was saying in Chicago. I mean, the inner cities of some of our major cities in the United States, and Chicago is one of the worst, has become so violent, and everybody's armed, and they're not very polite. You know, that's one of their little mantras: an armed society is a polite society.
Well, not so much in those areas.
Dodge City wasn't way back in the 19th century, and Chicago isn't. I mean, it has a catastrophic murder rate. All right,
even though they have gun control there.
Yeah, well, no, they just declared it uncut.
They got rid of it?
They got rid of it. They had to, because
that just happened then,
yeah,
huh?
Well, yeah, it just happened because the Supreme Court overturned these laws. I mean, I never for the life of me understand. Remember that idiot Republican from Texas who was saying...
wait, that could be just about anyone.
Yeah. You think I'm talking about George Bush. Said that... you know, that the founding fathers wanted everyone to have guns, which, of course, is not the truth.
Right.
But, you know, the Supreme Court held recently that the right to bear arms guaranteed under the Second Amendment included personal possession, and that states and municipalities couldn't make laws limiting except to, they said, to a certain extent. In other words, why can't you have a bazooka? Right? If you think you need one.
Right.
Or something like that. But the Second Amendment.
The tank.
Yeah.
We were going to bring the tank back.
Yeah. Why can't you have a tank? I don't understand. If you feel. You know,
got a wide enough driveway, just park that sucker.
Right. But the idea that the founding fathers wanted everyone to be armed is nonsense, because everybody wasn't. And secondly, as I said earlier in the show, a lot of the founding fathers really distrusted the masses. And the last thing in the world they would have wanted was a heavily armed
society.
Yeah, because there was actually revolts against the early government over taxes. I'm trying to think which were. Was it the Whiskey Rebellion or Shays Rebellion? Mm-hmm. But there were people that weren't buying the program of taxation, for instance. But the Second Amendment says, and they're all about commas, a well-regulated militia, comma, being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, comma, shall not be infringed. Well, right now...
Or the militia.
Yeah,
right?
Well, that's what it historically had been read as, but it has been read differently. And for better and for worse, when the Supreme Court interprets a law, that is the law of the land.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Exactly. I just want to throw out, our lines have been packed all night long, but we have a couple of open lines. So if you do want to get in, give us a call at 313-298-9743.
All right. We're going to be right back. We'll take this time while you're calling.
Our final segment.
Yeah, our final segment. And there's been remember this guy, Mitt Romney? Remember him?
Ah, Mittens.
Mittens. There's been a sighting.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julene will be taking more of your calls right after this. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and
Jolene.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. You know what struck me, Jolene, while the break was going on, and I was kind of thinking about all this? And if you're just joining us, by the way, we are talking about the situation that occurred over the weekend in Newtown. What was it, Friday?
It was Friday.
In Newtown. Shocked is, I guess, probably too weak a word to describe how all of us feel. And so we've been debating here or suggesting what can we do to remedy this situation. And the only people that have really given any concrete solution, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to dismiss people that have said education, and some people have said enforce the gun laws that are there. Well, I mean,
clearly that wasn't going to work in this situation.
Yeah, most three-quarters. Let me see if I can – I'll get you there. If I can find my website. In fact, you go to my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. Someone like 75% of the weapon – or it's in 75% of the situations of mass killings, the guns were legal.
Yeah, exactly. And they've all been men. Yeah. There's only been one woman.
But I guess my point is that no one has come up with a solution whatsoever other than the people that say there ought to be a proliferation of guns, and maybe that's what we're going to be stuck with. I know you're going to hate me for this. I mean, it will mean the more guns in more hands, the more people will act out and in individual situations, kill themselves more and all that. But maybe – but then we'll see. Will massacres be thwarted.
Thwarted, right.
Yeah, at a school, at a shopping mall, at a Denny's, you know, something like that. But I don't have any solutions.
I don't have any solutions either. I just wish all of this madness would go away.
Yeah, well, it's not.
I know.
And we can, let's see, Terry writes in the calltalkass@yahoo.com. There was a situation quite a few years ago, this was incredible, in which a crew of bank robbers buttressed by body armor and using powerful automatic weapons shot it out with police who had inferior weapons and were held at bay for over an hour. Did you ever see that video?
No, I couldn't watch that.
Well, these were guys, they were completely covered in armor, the robbers, and they were just walking, you know, just they were being shot like 50 times and it wasn't doing a thing to them.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah. So then now, I mean, there's been this huge militarization of the police, for one thing.
Yeah. So, Brian wrote in to Call Talk. Yes.
Terry says, more citizens walking around with handguns may cause more itchy trigger fingers, more impulse in everyday disagreement.
I couldn't agree more. Brian wrote in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I think this is great, Brian. He's going to take a different approach. He suggests that meditation be implemented in every school. It can be transcendental meditation, Buddhist meditation, something to teach children to become more aware of themselves and of their emotions and giving them a way to cope with the stress this country imposes on everyone. If they experience this daily from K through 12, then maybe as adults, it just might make a difference in how at least some of these individuals react. If it can't stop mass tragedies, then maybe it will help with the other 10,000 shooting deaths yearly. I think meditation's powerful. I do. But then there'll be the religious folk who
say, already are.
You're a bunch of freaks, you know, atheist meditators.
Well, quite the opposite's going on in Southern California. These right-wing Christian groups are trying to stop the school district somewhere. I thought I sent that to you. I don't remember seeing it. In Southern California, they're teaching kids yoga. And they said this is connected up with Hinduism.
Uh-huh. And so they're all Muslims. That's what they would probably say because they don't get it.
Well, you know what? How about this? This may be the first time in history. I actually agree with these people because this is a foundation that's hooked in with Hinduism.
Okay, but you can do yoga without putting
should get another kind of yoga and do it.
Just do like Hatha. Isn't Hatha yoga kind of your basic yoga, right?
Hatha.
Yeah. He's buried at the Renaissance Center.
Right, Hatha. H-A-T-H-A.
Yeah.
Brian, that's
my favorite email of the night.
Nick writes in from Wes, and why don't we enforce the gun laws we now have as strong as we enforce the war on drugs? Ooh, that's a bad analogy, man.
I just didn't know what to do with it.
All right, let's go back to our phones. Here is Richard and Fraser. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
How you doing today?
We're good.
Good. Okay, I want to come up with a couple. You guys were talking about the schools.
Yeah.
I went to a
I went to a real tough school. I graduated from that school back in 2000, or 99. It was called East Detroit High School, okay. East Point, Michigan.
Right, yeah.
Now they've changed that school completely around. Every door that you walk in has a metal detector.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, they have x-ray machines that you walk through the door. There's been people that tried to walk through with guns and don't succeed.
Okay, well, I mean, that's what we were saying. It may come to that.
Yeah.
We may have to do airport security everywhere. That's sweet.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, because back in...
Pat downs for everybody, right, Peter?
Right, yeah. Back in 96, there was a fight that broke out between...
Well, you know what? Your call is just deteriorating.
Yeah, it sounds like you're in Times Square.
Yeah, right. Oh, I forgot to tell you the sighting of Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney was randomly spotted again last Thursday, though this time it wasn't the real Mitt Romney. It's only the second strangest Romney sighting this week. A man wearing a mask depicting the former Republican presidential candidate was caught on camera robbing a Wells Fargo bank in Sterling, Virginia.
Oh, God.
Local officials haven't said how much the fake Romney had stolen. Probably nothing like the real Romney has stolen.
This was kind of a Robin Hood robbery.
Why?
Take from the rich and
give. Oh.
It was Mitt Romney, you know?
Well, isn't bank robbery kind of like a victimless crime?
I mean,
it's insured. Well, it's FIDC.
FDIC.
FDIC, Federal Deposit Insurance. Yeah, right. Thank you. Investigators called the robbery unusual because the suspect, dressed in a Florida State sweatshirt and wielding a gun, spent more time than normal inside the bank. He held up all five tellers, leaving only cash at the drive-through window untouched. So, you know, I have never seen a political figure drop from sight faster than Mitt Romney.
Well, no, you have.
Are you talking about Sarah Palin?
No. George W. Bush.
Oh, yeah.
He's completely dropped out of sight.
Yeah, he is. All right. Let's see. Wow, it is. Okay, here's Camille in Lincoln Park. Camille, hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead.
I was listening to your show and I heard about the shootings and the mother that went through some things, and I watched my child myself go through some things, go into shock and have different things from abuse behavior and that. How come nobody's seen what was going on with this guy beforehand? I think maybe instead of meditation, I was listening to you. Maybe we need to teach our children to be aware of, like, certain behaviors in people and things like that.
I think this guy was kind of a loner, what I'm gathering. We don't really have all the
facts. But his mother, nobody saw, even his own mother. I mean, we were kind of loners, and I had to speak up what was going on.
Well, we don't know what her situation was even at this point. We don't know.
Yeah, she's dead.
You know,
and, I mean, the problem is you see a kid who's kind of strange, or, you know, he's like a goth. Wasn't this kid kind of a goth character?
I heard somewhere around that.
Or all
but
he
man,
does
we've
is
got
work.
A goth character who works here, and he's A-okay, right?
Right.
You know,
so,
we like our goth friends.
Actually, a relative of mine at breakfast was telling us about an extraordinarily threatening man that has moved in across the street. I mean, the point where my wife and I were really worried about them. And what are you going to do? Like, my wife said, well, gee, you know, why don't you call the cops? And they said, well, the cops have been out there any number of times, and they're aware of them. But, you've got to commit a crime. You can't say a guy seems threatening.
Right,
you can't say he's weird.
I had a neighbor
weird.
Like that at one point.
Like that.
You don't want to – you're afraid to be on your own block. You don't know – yeah, you don't – you might stoke their little fire.
That's
right.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Okay. Here is John and Warren. John, hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
We're good.
Hey, a friend of mine had posted on Facebook a thing just before the right to work law passed. I kind of changed it a little bit now that it actually has passed. But what he posted on his Facebook page is that now that right to work has passed, I propose the right to reside. With right to reside, we would have the freedom of choice not to pay taxes. I don't support some of the things my government does or how it spends my tax dollars, so I should have the right to opt out of paying taxes.
Right.
Please write your congressperson and demand they get this important legislation to the floor. I thought that was great.
Yeah, we don't want to support these wars based on lies like the Iraq war, we don't want to pay any portion of our taxes that goes there. You know, I think that's
like half of our well tax stated. Money goes
yeah.
to
that's,
that.
That's well stated, but it's hard for me to get beyond. I mean, I understand why this political party that's at the complete behest of the corporations wants to destroy unions and make wages lower and all that. But why an ordinary person, and some people say, well, I'm not in a union, screw them, they're making $29 an hour, and I'm just making $8.75 an hour, so I hate those people. Rather than realizing that once they've got the union people down to be making $8.75, they're going to be making $3.75
right.
and say, well, wait a minute, isn't there a minimum wage? Oh, that could go because, hey, we can bring jobs in. Actually,
you know, there's some people you could try explaining that to, and they will never, ever get that.
All you got to do is look at union states,
God.
Look at right-to-work states, and right-to-work states is you don't want to work there.
Yeah, I had this conversation with a guy at school last week. He was, you know, it's funny how some people will ask you.
Wait, John, thank you very much. Appreciate
thanks,
your call.
They'll ask you a question about it, then they'll come back and they just wanted to get you to say something like, well, I don't believe in unions. I'm like, okay, you're not in a union. No. I told him exactly what you just told John here. And it's just like they don't grasp it.
Yeah.
It's like their daddy's told them the unions are bad and that's the way they're going to think.
The attack on unions is part of the race to the bottom. It's the Guatemala-Mexico syndrome where we're going to have one-third of the population well-wage, where all the wage work, the well-paid wage work, the commodity exchange, you know, buying stuff and having enough money to do it, it's going to be just kind of circulating that upper third. And as you get, you know, if you're in the 65th percentile, you're not so bad, but as you start dropping down, it gets meaner and meaner and meaner. And, of course, these Republicans, and I'm even afraid that somehow the Democrats are going to go along with part of it, want to start cutting the safety net, getting grandma and grandpa longer before they can retire and all this. And we go back to the fundamental question of where is all the wealth in this country going? And why do we have, why are we closing mental hospitals? Why don't we have enough to pay people, everyone, a decent,
living, fair wage?
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let's see. Here is, John Johnson, Melvindale. John, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Peter. I used to listen to you about 30-some years ago and, I'm going on 49 years old here. I just don't remember anything like this happening in the 60s, the 70s, the 50s.
There were a few. I mean,
was it more like murder suicide?
Yeah, but I mean, think about Charles Manson. Think about Charles Starkweather. You know that Bruce Springsteen made famous in that song "Badlands."
Some people that. There were a few people, Jim Jones and things like that, religious cults. But the love, what's the answer? You know, love. I was raised in a culture that believe it or not, they believed in the Bible, and they believed in a man named Jesus that said, you shall love your neighbor as you love yourself. And the first commandment was love God, and there was an authority. And the farther we move away from it, well, Peter, it's going to get worse.
Too bad so much has been done badly in the name of religion.
Okay, yeah. I'm not talking about Jim Jones, or I'm not talking about the Hale Bob Comet people.
Or
I'm talking about the Bible. And people criticize the Bible, and they say, well, you know, they don't even know the Bible, the God of the Bible, who so loved the world.
Yeah, well, there's also was a few things. I mean, humans haven't acted very well in terms of, like, crusades. And
right.
Which,
you're also talking to a couple of atheists here. But
All right, but thank you, John. Keep the faith. Keep the faith, brother.
For you, keep it. It works for my sister. She's a beautiful human being. Do your thing.
By the way, atheists and other religious skeptics suffer persecution or discrimination in many parts of the world, and at least seven nations, they can be executed if their beliefs become known. They're always talking about this war on Christianity.
Well, there's something good about being an atheist in the United States.
Yeah, in Europe. Well, actually, it says in Europe, sub-Saharan Africa, and Latin and North America, countries which identify themselves secular give privileges or favor Christian churches in providing education and other public services. While freedom of religion and speech is protected in the United States, the report said, a social and political climate prevails in which atheists and non-religious are made to feel like lesser Americans or non-Americans.
I don't feel like that.
At all.
They can try to make me feel that way, but I will never feel that way. And, you know, if a Christian wants to tell me I'm burning in hell, I just say I don't believe in hell, so okay.
Well, we haven't gotten very far getting those people to secede either because that want to. Because in at
like
least
Texas?
seven U.S. states, constitutional provisions are in place that bar atheists from public office. And one state, Arkansas, has a law that bars an atheist from testifying as a witness in a trial.
That is outrageous.
Well, it particularly is outrageous, and these people have no understanding of the Constitution, which doesn't mention God or Jesus. But it, as I may have read in the past, it says in Article 6, talks about senators and representatives before mentioned, they shall be bound by oath or affirmation, which means you can swear to God or you say, I affirm to support this Constitution, but no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States.
Except for in the South.
Except for in the South.
Good old South.
Absolutely. All right. Here's Craig in Milford. Craig, welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
I don't think there's anything we're ever going to do to stop mass murders and random acts of violence like this. But I think as a country, we have our priorities goofed up. We spend a lot of money protecting banks. We drive around our money in armored cars. You can't get into a court without being checked for a firearm because the judges are afraid. Rightly so.
Yeah, I was going to say, there have been some ugly incidents.
Right, there have. And because of that, they've changed that out in Michigan a lot. As a law enforcement officer, I'm aware of that. We send our most precious resource, our children, to school at a gun-free school zone where these psychos who are looking for a body count know right where to go because there's no guns there. They seek the path of least resistance because they want a body count.
Well, they don't all go.
And that's what they got.
The majority of them aren't it, are they, at school? I mean, they're everywhere. They're malls and what have you. So what are you, you're saying,
churches.
You're like we said before, none of us, I haven't heard one single good argument for getting to the root of all of this, and what people have suggested, I think you're suggesting the same thing, Craig, is that at least we ought to, huh?
Well, yeah, what I'm suggesting is that there is no solution, but we have to prioritize and guard what's
protection.
Most precious to us.
Well, you know, I said earlier, I don't like the idea that we have to live in a, you know, a stockade that we're living
paranoia.
In.
Paranoia.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Well,
there's a difference between paranoia and fear.
Right, but
What if they're really after you?
Yeah, but, you know, that fear can turn into paranoia.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is we want to be 100% safe, and that's understandable.
Yeah.
All right, Craig, thank you very much. We're almost through the end of our show.
You know,
appreciate it.
It may go to the point where a lot of parents won't even send their kids to public schools, Peter, or private schools, for that matter.
Here's Mike in Washington, the home of the Octagon House, right? Are you waiting?
Mike?
Yes.
Hi.
How
you doing?
You got the Octagon House out there.
Yeah, we do. Not that interesting, though.
He sounds pretty thrilled about it, Peter.
Well, I just want to talk about the guy who called about the Bible. And, you know, I think he's forgetting, like you said, Peter, the Crusades.
Yeah.
Let's not forget Abraham, who was so crazy that he wanted to sacrifice his son.
Yeah.
I believe in a higher power. Call it God. Call it whatever you will.
The universe.
Exactly. Thank you very much. A Big Bang happened for a reason.
That's right.
And
I think.
Exactly. Now, I just don't understand. These people are trying to enforce religion while other schools are taking them out. Let's put yoga in there.
I agree.
Let's put something in there that would install a sense of, like a path.
They could call it just a moment to clear our heads.
Right.
Exactly.
And breathe.
Calm yourself. Everything will work out just fine.
Yeah, calm yourself.
Yep. Well, both of you guys are putting a little bit more stock in it than I would, because
every little bit helps, Peter.
Well, I know. It would be good for all of us in general. I try 3 times a day to sit quietly mm-hmm. and take 10 deep breaths.
Yeah.
Usually by the time I get to 6.
Well, you're so ADD, that's the problem. You know, Jerry Seinfeld was on one of those morning shows this past week.
Yeah.
And he's really big into transcendental meditation. And
oh my God.
He attributes it to his success.
Is that right?
Yes.
Wow. Well, that's TM in the AM, TM in the PM. They give you your little mantra, and then you get really into it. You can levitate yourself.
Oh, come on.
That's what they say.
He wasn't even talking about levitating, though.
Oh, then.
He was just talking about clearing his mind.
Screw it. Can't live it.
Quieting his mind.
Yeah,
Peter.
Good idea. All right, real quickly. Thanks.
Let me guess. You can levitate, too.
Me? No. No. But we're going to have to maybe take this as our last caller. Gerardo, hi. You're on the air. Thank you for calling from Detroit.
And, yes, it's rather a touchy subject, and there's many different thoughts. Wish I had more time, though, but...
You got to call earlier in the show, Gerardo.
Well, I just heard you guys, and I was just mainly listening. But yeah,
I'm glad you did.
Gerardo, you got 60 seconds, and I got to wrap it up. Go ahead, quick.
Okay, well, just basically, like one of the callers was saying, was love. But it's just like sometimes some people just don't face if the child is. I mean, there's some children who literally start fights. That's the time when you got to stop them and say, no, that's not right. Don't do that. I mean, I've even been in stores where I've seen little kids kicking their big sister, mom, dad, whatever. I want this. And it's like, wait a minute, stop. You know, and then I've seen little children that are just so nice, so loving and all. And it's just that.
Well, what does it all come from? I was banned from grocery stores because I used to, you know, when I was like 3-4 years, I would grab the bottom can off these displays.
Oh, Peter.
Yeah, really?
You have been trouble since day trouble. One.
Born and raised hell in the Motor City. Gerardo, sorry to cut you short, but the clock says we all got to go. Thank you for calling. Well, what did we solve? Absolutely nothing.
It felt good to talk about it, didn't it?
I can really come up with some real solid proposals, solutions, platforms, agendas for things like, you know, what's happening, the attack on labor and all that. This stuff, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Stay safe, stay peaceful. We'll talk next week.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Show me how to lie. You're getting better all the time and turning all against one. Is it art that's hard to teach? Another clever word sets off an unsuspecting hurt. And as you step back in the line, a mob jumps to their feet. Now just good chance, man.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Bingo, that's the one.
Everything that rocks.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. You know that song, remember that? Love and marriage go together like a horse and carriage. Many of you might know it from the Fox sitcom, Married with Children, you know, when marriage had not become Ozzie and Harriet as it was in the 1950s. And it was played in sort of an ironic manner. And the song itself stems back to the 1950s. In fact, Frank Sinatra sang it. It's a, what was his name? I can't even, Steve Kahn, a great songwriter in any event. And it was said then, sang then as well, as a serious affirmation of marriage. One man, one woman, for every boy, for every girl, all of that. And today we see a lot of echo of that same sort of perspective. Marriage is about a man and a woman, and there's fights. Can it be same-sex couples? Can people just live together and be recognized? All of that. But still, that tradition, we're told, of a man and a woman with the with maybe a church and for certain the state sanctifying this union is what marriage is all about. Or is it? Well, I have a great book here. It's called A History of Marriage, From Same-Sex Unions to Private Vows in Common Law, The Surprising Diversity of a Tradition. The author is Elizabeth Abbott. And Elizabeth Abbott is an award-winning and best-selling author and historian with a special interest in women's issues and the environment. History of Marriage completes her trilogy about human relationships that includes a history of celibacy and a history of mistresses. She lives in Toronto, but we're reaching her at the offices of Seven Stories Press in New York City. Elizabeth Abbott, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you so much, Peter. That was a lovely introduction.
Well, I wish I would have known about your other two books. I would have, maybe we can go backwards.
Okay.
But let's start with a history of marriage. So does it go together like a horse and carriage? That sounds kind of old fashioned.
Love and marriage? As a matter of fact, love was at one point, until really well into the 18th century and even into the 19th, was regarded as a very unsound basis for marriage. And it was frowned upon because it was thought to be ephemeral and it just wasn't sound. What marriage was about was a financial arrangement. It was about combining incomes, or it was about contiguous land that would be joined by two families. Marriages were arranged by parents for financial, you know, commercial reasons.
Well, then we talk about the 19th century being the romantic period. Is that when that all began?
It's when the idea of love as an important element in marriage, not the important driving force the way it is today, but as an element in marriage, started to develop, so that it was acceptable to take that into consideration. And it wasn't the sort of pulsing, heart-throbbing, you know, loin-throbbing love that we feel that we have to have today. It was a companionate sort of a affectionate love.
Well, marriage, it's, many people tell us, in fact, couples appear to be throughout the human experience to be the central element of all communities. And so when we have laws in the United States, I know you're from Canada, but we have laws in the United States called the Defense of Marriage Act that somehow it was felt that this institution is under assault by cannon fire. Does marriage need a defense?
No, I think that the best defense that marriage could have would be successful marriages. And the way we're going to get successful marriage isn't to impose laws. It's to explain to people what marriage is all about. And it's to make sure that they know that it's to give them a choice as to whether they want to get into it, to make them understand that the most successful marriages are ones in which people, you know, give careful consideration going into them, and they are very compatible. It's probably better if they're educated and they're a bit older, as opposed to, you know, 18 or 19. And if you parse the divorce statistics in that way, really it isn't a scary thing at all. It's if you're ill-equipped at life, you will probably be, you know, ill-equipped at marriage as well. So the more preparation you have in your life, the better your marriage will be too.
if my memory's a little better now, I think it was Sammy Kahn who wrote the lyrics for Love and Marriage, the song by that Frank Sinatra sang in 1955. So everything was sweet and romantic. And then by the late 1980s, when Married with Children comes along, the Fox sitcom, and Love and Marriage is pretty much the theme song, done in an ironic manner. What happened in 30 years? Was it just the so-called sexual revolution that sank the popular conception of marriage?
You know, the popular conception of marriage wasn't necessarily the experience of lived marriage, and people weren't feeling that within their marriages. And one thing that happened was, during World War II, when men went off to war, women were, it filled a huge gap in industry to go into the factories that men had left and that had to be staffed. And women were given a lot of encouragement. The governments of both Canada and the United States set up daycare for women, free daycare, to enable them to go into the factories and to do jobs that men had held before. They gave them special perks. Women did this through the war. They got good salaries. They had the assistance of daycare, the prestige of knowing that they were, helping their country. They were being patriotic. Then after the war, the daycares were collapsed. The women were laid off their jobs. The men returned and got the jobs. And women were told that what they should be doing was being a homemaker. They should be June Cleaver with, in Leave It to Beaver.
Yeah.
But guess what? They didn't like that. And that wasn't an experience, especially after the liberation of their war work, that Rosie the Riveter didn't want to be June Cleaver. She liked being Rosie the Riveter. She liked being more independent. And so there was an awful lot of unhappiness that was simmering, that expressed itself later on in the 70s and the 80s.
So it wasn't those darn hippies that did it all.
It wasn't the hippies. The hippies didn't do that, no, I don't think.
My guest is Elizabeth Abbott, and she is the author of A History of Marriage from Same-Sex Unions to Private Vows in Common Law. We're going to get into some of that and the surprising diversity of a tradition, which we also will talk about as well. You're listening to the Peter Werby Show. But marriage has always been disparaged. The formal marriage, the church and state-sanctified marriage, has always been disparaged in popular literature and humor, hasn't it? This is nothing new from the 1960s or the 1970s or even post-World War II.
It certainly isn't. Someone sent me the other day a very long piece by St. Jerome.
Okay.
from centuries ago, talking about the awful, how awful marriage was. Now, he wasn't married, obviously, but this was his observation, and people confided their experiences to him. You can find literature throughout the ages that really sounds as if it were written today. The mother-in-law jokes, the my wife will let me do anything jokes, or my husband is a baby and thinks I'm his mother jokes, and so on and so forth. There's an awful lot of reality that hasn't changed a great deal.
Well, I'm trying to think of the name of the African band, but the name of their album is called Marriage is a Problem. and living together, whether it's, a family with children or roommates or, spouse, is difficult. But has it always been so difficult, or is it seem more difficult these days?
Well, I think that we have different standards. I mean, if it was accepted for someone to boss you around and, clobber you every now and then you accepted it because that's just how it was. But if the same sort of thing is happening or even less, if you expect egalitarianism, you will be more unhappy with what you get if it doesn't quite conform to, your very high standards. So I guess that's really what it's about.
Well, this is sort of an old-fashioned way to formulate things, but I used to say this maybe back in the 20th century, that the women were reading Ms. magazine and the guys were still reading Playboy. So there was a different consciousness growing among women, but not among men. And now with such diverse forms of information and ideas, I'm not quite sure where people are getting all their belief systems from. But I suspect a lot of that still happens. And that may be what accounts for half of marriages in the States going bust, because women just won't put up with a lot anymore.
First of all, two things. One, I think that the same women who were reading Ms. back in the 60s have produced a generation of young men who are pretty good. they're really not, you know, they're really quite sensitized to women's needs and so on. I'm the mother of a 35-year-old married son whom I'm really proud of in terms of, you know, how he, not 100%, but 98% proud of how he is. I think he's pretty typical of young men that are much, much more competent as than their fathers were, let us say. And the other thing is that the divorce statistics of 50% that we terrify ourselves with are just the raw statistics. If you parse it more minutely than that, you'll see that people who are better educated and professionally established and so on will have a better, you know, go of it than people who are not in that fortunate position.
Well, that's that's actually really unfortunate because in this society, it's true on every level. The poorer you are, the more travesties that you suffer.
Yeah, look, you know, living together, and I'm not talking about whether you're married or not, just the actual fact of living with someone is a very difficult thing. And if you have all the stresses of not good jobs, of not enough money, of things going wrong that you haven't got the resources to deal with, it will be much more stressful, obviously. It's really true that if you have more money, you don't have to have a zillion dollars, but you have enough a comfort level will certainly make your life much easier and your relationship will be easier. Even in terms of privacy, for example, if you have more space, if you're not all squashed together, if you don't have incredible worry, chronic worry about bill paying or something, it will be easier. You'll have a better relationship.
Elizabeth Abbott is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. She's written A History of Marriage from Same-Sex Unions to Private Vows and Common Law, The Surprising Diversity of a Tradition. We really haven't gotten to much of the subtitle. By the way, this is published by Seven Stories Press. You can go to sevenstories.com or Elizabeth's website, which is Elizabeth Abbott, two T's at the end, .ca. Okay, and let's talk about the surprising diversity of a tradition. We're told that a marriage is a man and a woman sanctified best by church, but at least by state. Now, that has not always been the case, obviously.
No, I mean, first of all, the marriage used to, in colonial North America, where there were often not clergy, there was a thing called self-marriage. You just live together and it became accepted as a real marriage because that was the best that you could do and that was understood. That's one example. Also in North America, when European colonists came, they discovered that many of the natives had a different understanding of gender and that there were sort of a third sex, people who were not strictly male or strictly female, and they could marry, and there were different sorts of rights regarding these people. So that, and the colonists were extremely surprised by that. What is that about? And then now we're in Canada. We have, as of 2005, we have legalized gay marriage, so that men and women can a man can marry a man and a woman can marry a woman.
Well, and what? And the whole country must have fallen apart, and we haven't heard about it.
Well, guess what? It hasn't been, and in fact, it has. And many of the people who go to get married there are American too. But what has happened is that there are more children being adopted by gay couples. But a lot of people who are gay wish to have a family life that in every way resembles other family lives, except for the same sex partners. And we're discovering, for example, that lesbian parents turn out to be probably the best kind of parents. This is pretty new scholarship because it's a new phenomenon, but we are finding that out. And so that there are all sorts of changes, but another change is that it shores up, it reinforces marriage. So here was a complete group of people who were excluded from marriage, and now they are able to marry, and not, a certain number wish to, so that there is a strengthening of marriage.
How about in the Western tradition from Europe back into the Middle Ages and before? What sort of traditions were present there, and do they mirror what we have here now?
The there were all different ones that probably the biggest difference or the biggest change was that in Western Europe, marriages were arranged so that the actual spouses didn't have a great deal of say in the matter. I'm thinking of a case in England in the 15th century in which a father arranged with another man to marry off his daughter. And the only thing is he had two daughters, and he didn't put in which one. He decided to wait until the last minute, and sort of on the day of or the day before, he would decide which daughter was going to get married. This is the sort of way that, you know, that marriage was conceived. It had really nothing, very little to do with the individual. It was seen as a family affair. And you had to be, you know, think of yourself as part of the family. You couldn't think about your own needs and your own desires and so on.
Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Abbott, you mentioned earlier that many times, or most times, that these arranged marriages were about property and status and all that. And certainly they have that, not so much property, but links between people in pre-industrial society, but in Europe, say in the Middle Ages, what about the peasants? They didn't have much at stake to share, or did they?
You know, they might have. It depends. There were really badly off peasants, and there were, you know, better off peasants. They might have land that was, you know, fields that were adjacent that might be a good thing to, you know, to unite them. There might be a small business. There might be a dairy. There might be someone who had a leather tannery and someone else who had cows. All sorts of things like that. If someone might owe money and to acquit a debt, he might say, "Well, I've got this daughter," or you know, then you could have her for your son. All sorts of reasons like that. But probably if you were really, for the very, very poor, there really was less at stake. So it was more, they were more likely to be able to make those choices for themselves because it didn't really matter that much.
Well, conservatives, and by the nature of the description of their politics, they want to conserve what is, and they say things like marriage are carved in stone. We've carved it into a statute. In the United States, the Defense of Marriage Act, so-called DOMA, whereas in Canada, where you live, there's actually a national law permitting it. So the laws change, and maybe you could speak a little to how the American laws have changed in terms of property rights for women. Let's just start with that one, because I was going to say, and we could go on to race within marriage as well, which is, I think, always surprising, the aspects of that. But there's been, even in the 20th century, great changes on property within married families, correct?
Yes, there was. Women used to be, and this is true for all countries in the, you know, in the Western world. They were covered by a law of couverture, which means that the man basically was, you know, the romantic thing, you and I are one.
Right.
Well, that was true legally, and so he and she were both him. So he got to vote. And she didn't. He did the voting. He did the looking after the money. Even if she worked, and for example, if she wrote novels the way some women did, or she wrote, or she, you know, raised chickens and collected, sold eggs, he had the right to the money and she did not. And so that property rights made a huge difference. And another, at the same time, so in terms of sustaining a marriage, how could you think of leaving a marriage if you were going to then have nothing? The other thing was that, and this is not well known at all, is that until really the 20th century, if men, if there was a separation, men got custody of the child.
Hmm.
It was almost always the case that the man would get custody of the child, not the woman. As a result of which, in reality, a woman in a very unhappy marriage would nonetheless almost, you know, very few of them wished to risk losing their children and then becoming absolutely destitute because they would get nothing because they didn't have property rights. So when women got property rights, and that was in the 19th century that started, it really did change the face of marriage as well.
Was that by law?
I'm sorry?
Laws started
being passed in different jurisdictions to give women more control, you know, married women to give them property rights and so on. Not equality, but certainly making, you know, starting down the path towards towards women being, you know, real live people.
Yeah. Well, that's always good. A History of Marriage is the book published by Seven Stories Press. My guest for just a few minutes more is Elizabeth Abbott. Talk to us, if you would, about race and marriage. You're from Canada, but where it was most shameful, of course, was in the United States till up to, I think it was 1967. There were laws against African Americans and whites marrying.
Yes, and that of course, stemmed from slave times, because if that had been, and there were black-white marriages during slave times, and some of, there's a little bit about that in the book, but the laws against miscegenation basically were to maintain white superiority, because the very strong feeling behind it was, if there was intermarriage, then it was all over, then we're not superior because we can marry them, my God. And so it took Mildred Loving, who was an African-American woman, and her husband, Richard Loving, who they'd grown up in the same small town, they got married, and they were basically told that they'd go to jail if they didn't leave the jurisdiction because they had miscegenated. But they rebelled, and they took it through. They were a modest couple, but didn't sit right with them at all, and they took it to courts, and they had help, and it ended up that the law, the Supreme Court of the United States finally overturned all the miscegenation laws of the United States, and so black and white could legally marry everywhere after that. It took years.
Well, interestingly, in Massachusetts, there was a case. I read this book. I can't remember the author. It was called, the book was 1919, about that incredible year. And there was a couple, a white woman married a black man, and she had just a little bit of money, and the woman was eventually put in a mental institution, even though it was legal. There weren't laws against miscegenation, mixed marriages in Massachusetts. So they had their ways. Well, let's go to gay marriage in just a couple minutes we have left. And as you said, Elizabeth Abbott, in Canada it is now legal. The United States still has the Defense of Marriage Act. Yet I just saw statistics recently, 53% of all Americans support the right of anyone to marry. And when you start getting down people below 30, it's way up. So is this traditional view of marriage on the way out?
I think so, and I think that even some very conservative people, I don't want to say a name in case I've got it wrong, but that they are understanding that gay marriage actually is an expression of support for a traditional institution. So in that sense, it's actually a good thing for conservatives. And I think that the more of them that see that, the more widespread that view will be. Young people definitely, change our way of thinking about things, and they do not have our way of the old-fashioned way of thinking. And they don't, they're much more open to differences. They're much more accepting. And so I think it's really just a matter of time before DOMA, withers away, crumbles away.
Now, that would be a good thing, for sure. Often when I do a phone-in talk show, I ask people to call and I say, well, can anybody show how this, maybe you don't like it or conflicts with your religious value, your own religious values, not yours, but, a caller. But how does it harm anyone else who's married or anyone else who may want to get married to somebody of the opposite sex? And in like this case that's been heard about this proposition outlawing gay marriage in California, nobody can come up with anything where the harm is.
Yeah, exactly. It's extreme terror. It's some sort of almost pathological fear of something, an inability to, to think something through. And see, it really doesn't harm. So you don't have to go and get married to someone of the same sex. It's simply that you are allowing people to participate in this institution that you are so worried about that is dying, and they wish to help it not die. So how does it make sense to ban them from it?
And didn't the Beatles sing "All We Need Is Love"? And that they're all about love. I mean, when you see these scenes of gay men or gay women after they've been married, it's not just that they married couples are almost, you know, 99.9% happy at the altar, but it's sort of like an affirmation, I think. Yes, you are a human being, and I think that's important.
What? Mildred Loving, who is you know, a huge name in the miscegenation, in having brought down miscegenation laws, also has come out officially in support of gay marriage, and she said people should be allowed to marry who love each other, and that's all. And it shouldn't matter whether they are black or white or gay or same sex or whatever. It should be their right. So I thought that was, she extrapolated from her experience to those of other people, and I think that that's a very strong endorsement for it.
I think it's a perfect way to end the interview, too. And yet, the story goes on. We've just barely scratched the surface. I would highly recommend A History of Marriage, From Same-Sex Unions to Private Vows in Common Law, the Surprising Diversity of a Tradition. My guest has been Elizabeth Abbott. Thanks so much for being on the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you so much, Peter.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Waste our money.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. I don't know how many of you, and I can't even remember the name of the film. It was a Monty Python film, and at one point there's a woman in a hospital. She's about to give birth, and she's saying, I want the machine that goes beep. And when we think of childbirth, naturally we think about the advances. And we may have to put that in quote marks for the discussion with our guest. The advances that have been made in the delivery of our babies, that we're in the 21st century, that we should be able to deliver children without any difficulties. And if you hear the word midwife, boy, that sounds, what, 19th century, something like that? I mean, why would anybody, well, we hear natural childbirth, of course, but a midwife, not even in a hospital necessarily, people might say, whoa, that sounds too old-fashioned for me. But some people don't want to let the facts interfere with their beliefs, and here's one I think is going to do that. My guest is Ina Mae Gaskin. She's written a book for Seven Stories Press called Birth Matters, A Midwife's Manifesta, and we'll get to what the subtitle's all about. She's called the Mother of Authentic Midwifery, and she's practiced for nearly 40 years at the Farm Midwifery Center in Summertown, Tennessee. She's the only midwife for whom an obstetric maneuver has been named. The farm itself has handled almost 3,000 births to date, has a very low C-section rate, and remarkably good outcomes. Ina Mae Gaskin herself has attended well over 1,200 births. She's the author of Spiritual Midwifery, now in its fourth edition, Ina Mae's Guide to Childbirth, and Ina Mae's Guide to Breastfeeding. A lot here. The brand new one is Birth Matters, A Midwife's Manifesta. We're reaching her in Summertown, Tennessee. Welcome to the broadcast, Ina Mae Gaskin.
It's great to be here today. Thank you.
Thank you. And as I said right before we began, I don't know why I didn't put this all together more quickly, but the farm is a famous, are we still calling it a commune from 45, 50 years ago, right?
Well, we actually never did call it a commune because we weren't communist.
Okay.
We were a community, really an intentional community. And we started in early 1971. We were vegetarian by choice, a lot of college graduates among us. We were seeing a lot of the things that are before us today, depletion of resources. We were seeing the unhelpfulness of war as a way of getting to peace. We wanted to get back to more natural ways. We wanted to get to self-sufficiency. And so we were very lucky in that we were able to buy about almost 1,800 acres of Tennessee forest in a rather poor area. And we've been here ever since.
Well, you and your husband, Stephen Gaskin, was one of the founders as well. And he and the farm, at least in a lot of circles, is fairly well known. And at some point, I don't know, right at the beginning, but I know in some of the material that you sold, that you referred to yourself as hippies, which is kind of an out-of-fashion word now. I suspect you've let that go as well.
Well, it was certain ideals that were going on at the time that and the media portrayal was rather weird because that word carried a lot of connotations to other people that didn't to us. We were all about peace and love and cooperation, getting along with each other, growing our own food. And of us women, I think this was very big for us. We couldn't see why you had to have a forceps delivery just because it was your first baby.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, 2/3 of American women were forced to have forceps deliveries, which is something that's very outmoded now. And it happened no other place in the world, but 2/3 of women having the babies pulled into the world rather being pushed into the world.
Well, I was going to say, just to let particularly the men and maybe childless people or people without children is a better way to say it, like myself, what you were talking about, forceps. In other words, they used to just kind of yank the baby out, right, by the head.
Yeah, and that's like inserting some very large, sort of picture something like giant salad tongs you know, kind of a cup-like stainless steel tool. Not comfortable, obviously. And, you know, rather large cut to the woman's perineum, also quite unnecessary. Nature's provided better than that. But this was due to a obstetrician in the early days, 1920, proposing that all women should have this for first babies, lest the baby become brain damaged. And so no one in, no other group of doctors in the world believed that. But this particular guy who had never married and who I think didn't get a very good education in his training period, thought that birth was really quite necessarily a brutal affair, and he had a very different preparation than someone who, let's say, who had grown up on a farm would have had, who would understand then that, you know, every other species manages to give birth. Humans aren't so very different in a lot of ways from the other mammals, and they would lean toward a more gentle and patient way. Certainly no peremptory surgery or instrumental deliveries.
Well, Ina McGaskin, when did you and others on the farm in the early 1970s get the idea that maybe that men shouldn't be yanking babies out of women's wombs?
I got the idea. I mean, I always had the idea. I hadn't heard of forceps until I was an English major. I got a master's degree in English in the mid-60s, and during the time I was a graduate student, I had my first baby and only found out a day or so before that this doctor, I had said I didn't want pain medication. Why? Well, I would have had pain medication if I was having my wisdom teeth out. I did that, but giving birth is something different. It's something that a healthy person does, and you know, it has nothing to do with dental procedures or stuff. And I knew that any mammal can give birth. I didn't really think I was inferior to any other creature. And I had read, there's this novel that you have to read when you when you're an English major called Tristram Shandy.
Sure.
And it was all about, and this was 18th century, right? And it was about the rivalry between the kind little old midwife of the town where Tristram was born and the doctor who has the forceps. And his mother wants to have the baby naturally. Sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Well, her husband wants the newfangled tool. Well, the trouble with forceps, which, you know, were invented centuries ago, is that they are more in use in among people who insist that a woman lie down while giving birth, which is something that really, well, some people can do it. A lot of people simply can't give birth in that position. They actually have to be up and upright using gravity. And so forceps came into use on rich people, and because they were technology, it was kind of easy for doctors to convince wealthy men that you could save the wife a lot of trouble and a lot of hours of hard labor, supposedly, by shortcutting and using these tools.
By yanking, essentially.
Yeah, by yanking, which you can really seriously injure a baby with it.
Well, they do have, they wind up with marks on their head. And
I can't even count how many people I've sat next to on airplanes who showed me the marks on their heads.
Oh, really?
And I told them they were the lucky ones, yeah.
That was
fractures, wow. I met a young woman who was on her 42nd brain surgery at the age of 17 because it had caused such a tear that she was leaking cerebral spinal fluid all the time.
Wow. My guest is Ina McGaskin. She's been called America's leading midwife, and her brand-new book is called Birth Matters, A Midwife's Manifesto. You can go to her website, inamay.com. There'll also be a link on my website, peterwerby.com, and I'll repeat that all later. But you didn't really tell the story of how, you had this idea that you wanted to have natural childbirth, but suddenly, I mean, how does one become a midwife? You just say, oh.
Well, my story is really quite unique and odd. This was a lecture tour. So my husband, Stephen, was invited by 42 ministers to go out throughout the country, and 200 or so class members, because he had a class going on at the time called Monday Night Class, and they wanted to come along. Some of them were pregnant. One of them went into labor. When we were about 2,000 miles into the trip, we were on the campus of Northwestern near Evanston. The woman was terrified to go into hospital. She thought Stephen might be a good midwife because he was a Korean War veteran, and she figured he might have some first aid experience. I wanted to be a midwife secretly. Stephen was due in an auditorium, so I knew he had to go in and speak to the crowd, and since I wanted to be a midwife and didn't know of any way to get any training, I volunteered to come, and they were satisfied. And we were all very lucky because it was a perfect labor for one to see as the first one. And my suspicions that birth worked were confirmed by this woman who gave birth in a couple of hours beautifully. She looked ravishingly beautiful, something I never expected. And I had only known by stories that quick birth was possible with humans. I'd read a book called Childbirth Without Fear, written by a medical doctor, and I thought all doctors agreed. So it didn't seem to me too big a stretch to think that, you know, women too could do this. And I had a neighbor while I was in university who managed to have a baby in 20 minutes with her first. So, again, this reinforced my idea that we weren't inferior to other animals, and I thought being a midwife had a lot to offer women because I thought you shouldn't have people at birth who are terrified of birth because that itself can cause complications.
Well, now you have a situation where, I mean, or tell me if you think this is true. I mean, you may have been lucky. What if it would have been a breech birth or a cord around the baby's neck? And so you must have developed these skills because in 40 years, the Farm Midwifery Center, where we're reaching in Summertown, Tennessee, has done almost 3,000 births. You've attended 1,200. In those, there must have been problems. How did you learn skills that were beyond what would happen in an easy situation, as you described?
Great question. After three babies had been born, of course, we were in the newspapers. There was a knock on my door, and at the door was an OBGYN named Dr. Louis LePere. We were in Rhode Island at the time. He'd read about me in the newspapers, and I'm sure he thought, oh, my God, there's this English major. She's been lucky so far. He packed up a bag and offered to give me and anybody that I wanted to assist me some training in childbirth emergencies. So he taught us some very important skills, starting with how to take blood pressure, but going on from how to resuscitate a baby, how to stop a hemorrhage, provided us with the equipment and supplies we would need, plus a little obstetrics handbook, everything we needed to give prenatal care to those women who were still pregnant. Once we arrived the next birth, I had to deal with a cord tightly wrapped around the baby's neck several times.
Oh.
Start the baby breathing, and stop the mother from bleeding too much, and was able to accomplish all that with the lessons that he had given us.
That's an extraordinary responsibility. I mean, were you fearful at any time? I mean,
I'm sure my heart was beating very hard when I dealt with the assistance of two friends, exactly what Dr. LePere had taught us to deal with, and we. With the three of us, we were good together. I wasn't alone. See, I think that's important to emphasize. I had these my pick of the smartest women that I could have picked, and not just smart but relaxed. There are people who can function well in a tense situation because we're just like that, and there are other people who will fall apart. And I recognized that this was a type of energy where I could function.
Now there's always.
And I recognize we're the same way, so we got confidence from it because we could sort all that out without going to hospital. Once we got to Tennessee, we found another doctor who was a family doctor who had 16 years experience working with an Amish community, and he accepted us very much the same spirit that he found that the Amish women were needed care occasionally, but were very good at giving birth because we weren't fearful. We actually were developing a culture of not being afraid of birth, but knowing how to prevent complications.
Mm-hmm. The book is Birth Matters, A Midwife's Manifesto. Ina McGaskin is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. She's America's leading midwife, and she also publishes, now I've lost it here. What's your newsletter?
Well, I used to publish something called Birth Gazette, but okay. I gave that up 10 years ago in favor of writing books.
Okay, well,
yeah.
We will update this bio. Tell me about the subtitle of your book, Birth Matters, a Midwife's Manifesto. Is that just making it a feminine ending as opposed to...
Yeah, it is. It's a manifesto, if you like.
But... Okay, no, well, that's good. I mean, the titles are good. People go, oh, what does that mean? Well,
I did, too, to tell the truth.
Yeah. Now, if my wife and I, of course, if my wife and I were going to have a baby now, they would probably make national news, but that's another particularly for her. But in any event, I say, okay, Ina Mae Gaskin has really convinced me that midwifery is the way to go. I would be very nervous. I mean, if we were around you, I would know, listen, this woman is so experienced. She is so committed to the practice. How would I know here in Michigan where in the world I would find somebody that was competent? How does one select a midwife?
Well, you ask questions. I think that people in general in our country don't study enough about the caregiver, whether it's an OBGYN, a family doctor, or a midwife. You really ought to ask a lot of questions because there's so much... There's so many different takes on birth. Some people believe it's a medical matter, and then obviously those of us who are with what we call the midwifery model of care point out that this is something that healthy people do, that it isn't something wrong, and that if you know anything about mammals, mammals choose secluded, private, low-lit, quiet places to give birth. They don't like noise, commotion, panic. One of the first things that any farm kid back in the day would learn is you never disturb a laboring animal. Somehow we've got a real serious case of human exceptionalism, and we actually have people that believe that the human female is the only mammal that actually isn't made well for birth.
Hmm.
You could bring everybody that had ever lived in this community in as an expert and say, well, then how come with no more training than that obstetrician gave, and I do study, you know, I'm kind of a scholarly type, okay, and try to learn everything that I can in addition, but still, why did we have 186 successful births without ever having have a cesarean,
yeah,
without having formal training? And I would suggest it's because I learned something rather negative, I guess, from my forceps delivery, which was, this is crazy to make an automatic edict that everybody will have her baby pulled out with these ferocious instruments.
Now you,
when it's not necessary.
Yeah.
I was never given a chance. You see.
You began this in the 1970s, and then I'm sure you're familiar with the pamphlet by Barbara Ehrenreich and Deirdre English, who wrote Witches, Midwives, and Nurses. And a good part of it, as we get into the 19th century, is the effort of male doctors to drive women practitioners out of being caregivers, to the extent where midwifery for a long time was illegal. You had to be an MD to deliver a baby. What's the legal status of midwives now in the U.S.?
Well, I am familiar with the pamphlet, although I didn't hear about it, oddly enough, until the early 80s, that little book. But it's an important little book. And the interesting thing is that witch hunt against midwives that went on in Europe still didn't destroy the profession of midwifery. That only happened here in North America. So I've always been fascinated with what was that about? You're quite right, though, that it was about competition here in the United States. And so when you had doctors that were entering, you know, the profession here, you didn't have the same sort of reluctance to take on the work of the midwife that you had in Europe so much. And there was actually the competition between the two professions was pretty strong, and the midwives were pretty unable to meet the organized anti-midwife campaign that took place in the early 20th century.
And so what's
wiped it from memory, yeah?
Well, I mean, it usually, like I said at the beginning of the introduction, that it, you know, it's thought of as, I want to be in the hospital with a machine that goes beep. What's the legal status now?
Okay, it's different in across the country. In the Northeast, you rightly said that it was made illegal in several states. As you got to the Southeast, it was legal. Because there weren't any doctors to take care of people in most of these small towns and rural areas. So midwives were kept on in the southeastern states, in the southwestern states as well. And when you got to the Northwest, you had so many Japanese and Chinese that had kind of, there were more liberal attitudes as always on the West Coast. So it's a mix. You have 50 different laws, essentially. Here in Tennessee, when we arrived, the legal status of midwives were that nurse midwives were not legal because their legislation had not passed yet. But the practice of midwifery itself was not considered to be the same as the practice of medicine. So it was not illegal.
Well,
no regulation at all.
I may, Gaskin, we only have a few minutes left. This is so fascinating. All of this is taken up in Birth Matters, Midwife's Manifesto, published by Seven Stories Press. You can go to inamay.com. But maybe, and this is my fault, what's the downside since they're not doctors aren't pulling babies out of women's wombs anymore. They have natural childbirth centers and all that. What's the downside of going to a hospital for delivery as opposed to going to a midwife?
Well, the difficulty that we have going on in the United States today, and let me say real quickly too that we are legally working here in Tennessee. I am a certified professional midwife, certified through the North American Registry of Midwives, and half of the states have this. Michigan doesn't happen to be one of them yet, but there is a push for legalization, regulation of this kind of midwifery where one doesn't become a nurse first. Now, what is the downside, you ask me? There's too much use of the cesarean section when it's not needed, and there's too much planned birth date, you know, by inducing a labor, again, when that's not necessary. And so women are actually being, and babies are being harmed by too much application of technology. When I began as a midwife in 1970, the cesarean rate was 5%. Today, it's 1 in 3 women, so close to 33%. When you have too much C-section, you actually have women who die because of it, and some babies will spend a lot, will have a higher death rate among babies as well, and you'll certainly have more babies that are spending time in the neonatal intensive care unit who might have not needed that. So not enough technology can be a bad thing, but too much use of it can also be a bad thing.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the broadcast. I mean, this has been fascinating, and it's only scratched the surface. Much more in Birth Matters, the Midwife's Manifesto. My guest has been Ina Mae Gaskin. She's been called America's leading midwife. You can go to her website, inamay.com, inamay.com. I'll have a link on my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com, and continue the discussion, with your partner. And I'm saying this to people that may be thinking about a decision that has to be made. Ina Mae Gaskin, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Peter. I enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF.
The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Rip Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Keep listening for your next chance to jet off to London, England with your Detroit Pistons. Learn more online at WRIF.com.